Thank you, Brad. Hello, everybody. All right. Well, before I make my introductory comments, I want to thank everybody for being here in person. And it just feels awkward in a very nice way that we're finally next to other human beings and not just screens in front of us. So it's very, very nice to be here in our new space. And forgive me if I look awkward, as this is my first meeting, and I'll be a little robotic as I'm looking at the screen, but I promise you that I will be off script next time. Not Donald Trump off script, but off script, okay? Yeah. All right. I hereby call the meeting of the KIPP SoCal Public Schools Board of Directors to order at 1:10. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our December meeting. I'm going to ask Belen to record the attendance. Belen?
Yes, I'm going to go through the roll call. So John is not present. Carlos?
Present.
Randy?
Here.
Thank you. Mel?
Here.
Courtney is not present. Phil?
Yeah.
Great. DJ?
Here.
Julie?
Here.
Heather?
Here.
Norma? I believe is running late. Nancy? I believe will be joining us a little later. Naeem?
Here.
Luis?
Here.
Okay, great. That gives us 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, a quorum. Thank you, Luis.
Thank you.
Well, I can do the next slide for some page and we'll go.
Forget that.
Okay. Now we need to let everyone know meetings are being recorded.
All right. Well, let's go with the logistics.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll begin with logistics and norms, as this is our first meeting and our first in-person meeting in 3 years. There are a few updates that I want to share related to meeting in person. Board members must be in person within LA Unified School District boundaries to participate and count towards quorum for meetings. In compliance with SB 126, members of the public are able to listen and provide public comment from any KIPP SoCal site. We currently have the meetings available across KIPP SoCal communities. For those watching at a KIPP SoCal site, we do have interpreters online to provide Spanish-English translation. If you are at a site and need to listen to the meeting in different language, check with the school site personnel and make that, and please make this change. The interpretation settings can be accessed by clicking the globe icon in your Zoom menu. We will still need to utilize roll call voting for audio purposes. After presentation of the item and any questions and discussions, I will ask for a motion and a second. Board members, when you are making a motion, please state your name for the record. If we have those motions, I will turn it over to Belen to conduct the roll call vote. She will read off each board member's name. As we approach a voting item, please make sure you are prepared to respond with either yes, no, or abstain. As a reminder, for board members and members of the public, KIPP SoCal board members are recorded. We post audio recordings of our meetings and share them with our authorizers. Now,
Other way.
Here's an overview of our meeting today. Our agenda includes voting on our consent agenda, a KIPP SoCal update, including presentations from several departments, compliance updates and voting items, finance items. We also have a short closed session today. Okay, Angela.
All right. Well, it's usually I have this picture up because we're always on Zoom, but everyone is here in person. And so we have our senior leadership team and our executive team here. So Kavika, here we are, Joanna, that, you know, our resident person that gathers us together, Amber right here, Jen. Okay, so we're going to pause because Jen Miranda, who is our former director of IT, is now our chief operating officer. Welcome, Jen. We have Michelle, who is our Chief Talent and Equity Officer right over here. Kyle, Chief Financial Officer, and Belen, our Chief of Staff. We have, of course, Cecily, our in-house counsel, and we have Scotty and Roxy back there who are on the executive team supporting. We also have a lot of team members here today, you can see. So we have Aisha Bonner over here. Aisha has been a founding teacher with us at Scholar. She has led, several schools, but Kit Vita, and she is now a director of schools. We have Lindsay Brianza, who is all things public affairs. You've seen Lindsay a million times. We have Libby Gronquist, who is our school leader over at KIPP Philosophers. She's also a founding teacher at KIPP Soul, was at KIPP Scholar. We have Miss Queenie Johnson, our first ever director of equity. She is right here. You're going to hear from her today. Stephanie Kinoshita, longtime teacher leader here at KIPP SoCal. She will talk about our teacher residency. We have Tiffany, who I'm sure emails you all the time. Where's Tiffany? Where's she? There you are. You know, everyone knows who Tiffany is. Diana Rodriguez and Lonnie Webb, who are part of our KIPP Forward program. You get a chance to hear from them. And then we have Melissa Torres over here. She is our school leader for KIPP Pueblo Unido. And then, of course, Curtis, all things authorizer relations. He speaks district language like nobody else. And so welcome to our SST. This is our new office space. We moved in, I don't know how long ago. We're still moving in and figuring out how to live in a space. You know, it takes about a year to unpack all of our boxes. We have real furniture that will be here one day. It's probably on a ship outside in the Long Beach Marina. Or port, but thank you for coming. If you have any questions around where the restrooms are, other water, Roxy and Scotty will help you out with any of your needs. And with that, I will kick it back over to Luis.
Thank you. Okay. Going on to public comment. Belen, do we have any members of the public to provide comments today?
If there are any members of the public at any of the school sites who would like to provide comment, if you can go ahead and raise your hand. And then I don't know if we have any members here. I don't see any here. So if there's any at our school sites, please use the raise hand feature. We'll get it. I don't see any hands raised, Lisa. So okay. No public comment.
So no public comment in person or via remote. Okay, moving on to the consent agenda. As a reminder, we do not discuss items on the consent agenda. If there are any items of the consent agenda that require clarification, we can remove them and discuss them prior to voting. I'm asking the board members, are there any items that anyone wishes to remove from the consent agenda? I don't see any. Noes? Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented?
Motion.
Motion from Randy. Is there a second?
I'll second. Heather.
Heather second. Okay. Belen?
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Naeem? Yes. Luis?
Yes.
Okay, that's everyone, Luis.
Motion passes. Okay, Angela.
All right, well, I'm excited that we'll finally have in-person presentations for today and you get to meet some of our team members. So it's been a long time. I jam-pack it. It might be ambitious, but once I have everyone here, I really want people to engage with our team members. I think that's very important. So we have three presentations that we're going to hear at the beginning of this meeting, one about our teacher residency program, one about KIPP Forward and our college and career counseling, and then about our anti-racist initiatives. And so first up, we have our teacher residency program. And so I'm happy to introduce Stephanie Kinoshita, who's our director of teacher residency. And she has two of our teacher residents here. I feel like they're celebrities. We need to treat them like celebrities. Yes, man. This is Travis and Alondra. They'll come up in a second, and we're going to be able to hear from them and ask questions about what it's like to be part of the teacher residency program. But I'm just so excited because this is the future of the teaching profession here today, and you'll get to hear a little bit about their stories and about our residency program. So real life teachers, everyone. All right, Stephanie, take it away.
Thank you, Angela. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Stephanie Kinoshita.
I've been with Pipsoak Health since 2008, was a founding teacher with Amber at Raisa, and started this program in 2019. A little bit about the teacher residency. It is a year-long teacher preparation program in which aspiring teachers can earn their master's and their credential in 1 year. They get to learn in a classroom with one of our most experienced and successful teachers, and really just have this immersive experience of learning what it's like to teach well so that they're prepared for their own classrooms the first day that they begin on their own. There are a lot of benefits to the residents, but also to our team members, such as our mentors. This is an opportunity for us to be able to develop and retain some of our most effective teachers by offering them this opportunity to teach another person how to teach. And they get leadership and coaching from me and my team member, Yuli. And then there's also a lot of benefits to our students. We are building a qualified teacher pipeline so that the teachers in front of our students are compliant and also effective, as well as during the residency year, there are two teachers in every residency classroom. And that is just a huge benefit to our students to have that second adult to support their learning. Overall, we're really working to both diversify our teacher pipeline, as well as to continue to build our structures for supporting teacher development and to retain teachers long-term. It's one of, the pieces of our vision is when you're trained really well, you're going to stay in the classroom a lot longer. And so today we have a couple of folks who are going to share their experiences so far in the residency, and then we'll just facilitate a little bit of a Q&A with you all. So have you both come on up here and introduce you, and then I have a couple questions I want to ask them first, and then I'll open up for questions for you. So, coincidence that these two teacher residents are actually at the school site that we have school leaders from today. It just was a coincidence, honestly. It was not planned.
No pressure. But
this is Alondra Velasco. She teaches in a third grade classroom at Kipwa Bonino.
Hi.
And Travis Lacey, who teaches in a sixth grade social studies classroom at Kipwa. And so I'm going to have them share more about themselves, but I just want to open up first with a question about kind of why teaching, why the teacher residency. So, Alondra, yeah.
So I've always been triggered of teaching ever since I was in elementary. I saw my teacher and I was like, oh, I want to be like where she's at. And so I always kept that in mind until like the end when I graduated high school. When I started college, my first year, I literally went in already knowing what I wanted to do. So I was like, okay, I want to be an elementary teacher. I'm like, that's what I want to do. And during the, when I graduated high school, I started, I started going to a job, a back to school program. Cause I was like, okay, I want to get in the feeling of what a teacher is about or like what, you know, we do, what teachers do. So I went and go ahead and did that. And I was like, okay. And just for like financial circumstances, I was doing after school and BRIA, where BRIA is more like a one-on-one with autism or like any type of spectrum. So I went and ended up doing both. And I was like, okay, you know what? That's good for me because I want to see if, you know, maybe I'll lead through special needs or maybe just as a teacher in general. So I was going ahead and doing both. And I was like, okay, you know what? BRIA, like it was good enough, but I was like, I really want to not just do with one child, but I want to do with all. So I was like, I really want to inspire all children with like whatever mindset, like I want to, you know, give them or like anything of the learning that I know. So I went and go ahead and I was like, okay, you know, I throughout the years of my career, I was like, okay, I left BRIA and I was like, I'll still continue with after school. So I was for after school program for like 4 years. And then before that, they offered me like saying like, oh, there's a job opening for KIPP. And I was like, okay, you know, that's even more better. I was like more into like the teaching field other than just like an after school program person. So I went and go ahead and took the position of an in-house sub. And I was an in-house sub for 2 weeks. it was like, it was just like out of nowhere, but like a teacher, there was a position for me to just take over a classroom the whole rest of the year, which is the first grade. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, is this like a sign? Like, is everything just happening? Like, what's going on? So, and then I was like, you know what? I my parents always told me, like, take it and, you know, you're going to learn through it. Like, even if you don't know, like, you're going to learn it. And what better way to learn is it when you're in the position? So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. And so I went in, I believe it was like at the end of October or no, sorry, it was October. Yeah, the end of October. And so I went in and I was like, okay, like, I don't know, like, exactly how everything goes, but luckily I had someone that in the first grade team that was like, I'll help you if you need anything. I was like, okay, perfect. So I was doing it. I was going along with the days, the kids. And luckily, like, I always went to her, like, I'm a person that if I have questions, I'll come to you with all my questions. And if you can answer it perfectly, if you can, that's fine. And so I went to my, the first grade lead teacher, which is Mrs. Gonzalez. And so I went with her and she was always helping me. And she's like, I got you. Don't worry. Like, do this and that. Like, oh my God, perfect. And so it was honestly like the greatest experience ever. And even like our principal at that time was Tessa. So Tessa had recommended me like, hey, I know you don't have like credentials set. I was like, because I was in a 1 year permit. So I was like, she was like, there's this program, you know, you can do your master's and credentials at the same time. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, you know, also fast. I was like, what is going on? And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do it, you know, because I really loved the first, with the first grade team when I taught, it was amazing. Like, I loved it. And I was like, this is exactly where I wanted to be. And I'm going to go ahead and take it. And so here I am now. The resident has helped me so much as well. And luckily, my mentor was one of the teachers that I was collaborating with last year. So that even made it even more better because she knew me, I knew her. And so it worked out so well. Like, I even asked her to now, like, hey, just a question. Last year I did this. This year I'm doing this. I was like, it's not working. Like, what else can I do? Like, don't worry. Like, no, you can try this and this and that. Because it's a third grade now. So I know it's different from first to third grade. It's a completely different curriculum. So it took me a while to understand the curriculum for third grade. But it was, like, I got it. And, like, my mentor was like, you know what? You did it last year. Like, really just in you. I think you're right. I was like, it is. But sometimes, you know, you get the nerves because, you know, it's another different grade and everything. So yeah, I really loved it. And the residency has helped me so much as well. Like, even in classes, I get like these tips and everything, which helps me more to present in the classroom. It might be different tips and it's good because I get to expose not even just like the kids, but also like my mentor, like, hey, I didn't know that you can do that. Like, yeah. So we both help each other out in the classroom. So that's honestly been amazing as now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. Travis, you tell us a little bit about what
brought
you to the teacher?
Okay, so I'm coming from the field of as a stay-at-home dad and a writer. So that's why I've done that for years. But an incident happened to me that made me want to go into teaching. And what it was is that my daughter was attending a charter school and she was going from middle school to high school. And my wife and I decided, you know what, let's get her into a school where she can have more representation as far as African Americans teaching. And I kind of just family, not family, but just familiarity in the classroom. I had that when I went to a HBCU as well. And that building was amazing. So I thought, let me have that for my daughter as well. So we found a school that was majority African-American school. So we enrolled her. She went to the school. And we thought everything was going to be exactly great. And it wasn't. We ran into a lot of communication problems with the teachers. Not the leadership staff, but just the teachers. And we had a problem talking to them just about our daughter in class and was going to school. So from that experience, which culminated in a parent-teacher conference where I wanted to meet the teachers, I tried to meet them and talk to them and contact them for, you know, weeks. So I'm thinking, okay, parent-teacher conference, get to finally see them and see what's going on, talk about my daughter, what's happening. I get there, they're not there. They didn't show. There were two teachers who were there who showed up for the parent-teacher conference and it was half her classes. So I thought, this is not going to be good. So we pulled her out of that. But from that experience, I thought, I could do better than those teachers. At least a little bit better. I could be there. I could show up. So that was in my mind. I can at least show up. Let someone show up and be there and also be their representation in the classroom, and the African-American male in the classroom where there are not that many. I mean, my K-12, I never had one African-American male teacher at all. So I thought this was a great opportunity, a great idea. For about a year and a half, I sat on the idea. It was always in my head. I spoke to a teacher at the school she is still at now. She's getting ready to graduate. And they told me about this program. And they sent me their information. They said, you should try it. So when you're a program, you get your credential, and you can, you know, be that teacher you're talking about. I was talking to him about it constantly. And so I applied and did all the interviews to get in. And I've been placed at a school where I could be that example, that black male example in the classroom. And not only that, there's another black male in the classroom as well. So in our classroom, we have two African-American males that help co-teach the classroom. And every day I get to be that representation. I'm familiar with the culture. They're familiar with what I talk about. And it's that whole familiarity thing that I was looking for. And it's happening right now as I go through the residency program.
My next question that I wanted to ask before I open it up is just to hear a little bit about where are you learning the most within the program? Like, what's kind of a highlight of for your learning? Londra, do you want to start?
Yeah. I'll definitely say both in the classroom setting and at the residency program. Classroom setting, because you're always learning something new. Like, every day is always something new. So it's exciting to learn, like, even from my mentor that has more experience, like, being a teacher. So that has helped me more learn from her. Like, when she's teaching, I see her, I write my notes, and I was like, okay, that's an awesome idea. Like, I did not think of that. Or, like, when I see the kids, like, I see the way she interacts with the kids. I'm like, okay, let me try that next time. And like that, like, I could, you know, work my way more into, like, the children's, to be, like, not the children having two different types of structure to follow, but just like one simple smooth one from both of us together combined in the classroom, even like when I take over or like when we're both out there. The rest of it has helped a lot as well with like the homework assignments. Like every time I do like observations or anything, like that has opened my mind thinking like, oh, these questions are true. Like, we need to think about where the kids come from. We need to think about like what their needs are. We need to think about like, where can we find the resources if we ever need to help them with like certain things, like English learners, like what do we do? Who can we go to help? Because that's part of like a homework. When you find out who is the director or like what resources do they have that we can also use from them? So that really has like both of them like just really helped a lot in like learning more and expanding just more of like what I can do and provide for the students and as well as the families as well, that they can help like either at home or any resources that they might need.
Well, I would say both places, in the classroom, as in the university classroom, the lectures at, as well as on site. The nerd that I am, I don't mind reading and learning new ideals and concepts on teaching and the new technology, the use for teaching, and different ways of how they're, you know, just the new ways that they're forging ahead and new ways of teaching again. And so that's pretty interesting to me. But in the classroom, as far as what stands out, what shines, is having an opportunity to work with another teacher who is really good. And as far as classroom control, as far as how lessons are put together, as far as how do you communicate and create relationships with the students that are there, he is all of that. And so I get a chance every day to see that and copy that down and do as much as I can that he is. And he always reminds me, hey, I've been doing this for 11, 12 years. You just been a couple months in, you know, you can't expect to be wired. How do you do that? Able to, you know, figure that out or communicate with that child in that way, or how do you think of that one part of the plan where you don't know to skip this and go here instead because this is what we're going to get to next? You know, all that stuff. I'm like, how do you think of that? And it's just like, hey, I've been doing it for a while. Give yourself time to get there, you know. And so that has been the most exciting part of it. And every day is something different. Like Lionel said, it's something different every day, and it's exciting, and I'm enjoying it. So that's the really star or light point of the program. Just being an actual on site in the classroom.
Thank you both so much. Questions that or anybody has here?
So what happens next in the residency?
So in the residency, so what we'll do is we'll graduate. And then we'll can either accept a permanent position usually at a KIPP school. Or we can move on to some other place with our degree as well as our think what do we have to look forward.
Yeah, the goal is as you can see, like we want to hire at least 90% of our residents in as our lead teachers. And so we begin the hiring process in February of the spring so that hopefully, you know, we'll go through, they'll accept roles and stay with us. So that's kind of one of the goals and processes that we have for that.
Thanks. Great presentations. You probably each came into this with a set of expectations. What's been the biggest
difference relative to those expectations you had, either of the experience you're having in the classroom or the residential children.
You have an ideal of what it's like to stand in front of a classroom and teach students. The ideal, you have an ideal. Like, it's what it is. You can imagine yourself 24. And then when you actually get in the classroom, you figure out, oh, there's real students. They have their own issues and ideals, where they are as far as, you know, education-wise. They have problem issues that they may bring from home and bring that in. So that's all part of it. So I never considered that part of it. I just thought, like, hey, I'm going to stand in the classroom, representing my people. So I didn't think that's something that was very different. I didn't realize I'm really going to be teaching people in front of me, you know, they have their own ideals. And so that was a difference for me.
Definitely. For me as well, I'll say, like, even having like the experience of last year, every kid is different, every student is different. So basically, like, for me, it was more like dealing with like the issue that was going on, like, how, what do I do, you know, like, and I would always go with my mentor, like, hey, if something like this happens, like, what do I do? So basically just having more of an understanding of like having that extra teacher on the side that you can ask questions, so you could also be ready for like next year, like, hey, you know, every student's different, they're all gonna have their own little situations going on. And what the grateful thing is that I have a mentor who I can just ask and be like, hey, what's a good idea, or what's a way that you will like handle the situation that I, you know, I can also do as well. And so she would just like tell me, and then I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds good, and I would try it. And then like she'll be there as well with me, like next to me, kind of like hearing like how it's going, and then like she'll give me like feedback, like, okay, that was awesome, like that was great. Like she would always start with like a positive something, and then if there's something that we need to work on, she'll let me know, like, hey, next time we work on. I was like, perfect, that's great. Like, I like that feedback because it lets me know, like, hey, I could better in something, which is great because I'm always looking to better something, because I know no one is perfect, and there's always something that we could work on more, which is awesome.
Probably have time for like one or two more questions.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, kind of related to that, like, what would you say is the hardest thing that you guys deal with going in as a new teacher?
I guess just like school and work, kind of like in a way, it's just being able to balance both at the same time, because I know like the homework is also as well like very it's not that it's like complex in some of them, so it kind of like we have to manage like when do we have observations in our classroom, like when do we observe kids, so kind of like just time management of like every homework assignment, when I need to do my observations, have everything scheduled like maybe a week before, you know, I start want to do something the next week, so just like time management. But overall, I mean, it's like the same thing, right? Like you, even when you're like an undergrad, you work as well, the same, you know, thing. So yeah, you just have to like work with it.
I agree with what she's saying as well. I haven't been in school for a while. I'm a little older student. And so that whole idea of time management and the rigorousness of it, it was, it took a second to manage. Like, whoa, okay, here we go. We got lots of stuff to do, you know? So that was more difficult at first. Yeah, jumping into that.
And it is an accelerated program. Typical master's and credentials programs last 2 years, and you're not full-time student teaching at the same time. So there's quite a bit. And can you imagine like how well prepared they're going to be for their own master's when they don't have their degrees? Well, maybe one more question.
How was the application and interview process?
The application was a breeze. What was nerve-wracking was the interview to get in. So one of the things you had to do, I guess at one time they did it face-to-face, but we're on Zoom. We had to get everything ready to do a presentation, doing a mini lesson, talk to people you haven't talked to before. So that was a little bit stressful at first to create a lesson plan at the very beginning. And so, you know, show yourself and you know, be a great candidate to come into the program.
Yeah, definitely. It was like the interview, because overall, like I was getting nervous with every interview. So I was just like, you know, very nervous what to expect. But they kind of, the good thing that they kind of like layered, like before you presented, they kind of layered out like, hey, we're going to do this and this and this. You'll present, you'll have time to like correct yourself, and then you'll represent again, which is even better because it's like you get to notice where you could work on more, and then you represent it, and then you'd be like, okay, like that's any more smooth. So.
I think you have one more question, Nancy. You have a question?
Yeah. Okay. This might not be a fair question since it's so early, but is there a cultural norm in education that you would like to change?
I would say more of me.
Great answer.
Reputation, I mean, that they say reputation matters, but it really does. I mean, even the statistics show that having someone looks like me in front of a classroom, other students look like me, increases their chances to go to college significantly. So more of that is great.
Yeah, definitely. I really like to incorporate like the culture in the classroom. It's always important, like you say. So I always try to like, if there's like heritage months, you know, of every kind, like I always try to incorporate or like even dress like whatever it is for that heritage. So I can have them like, hey, you know what, like this is what we're learning today. I'll try to make it interesting for them, or, you know, make it just them know of like different heritage. And not necessarily just force them to like it, but I kind of just expand them. Like, hey, you know, there's these different heritages that, you know, we might see or come across to, you know, we need to learn about them. And sometimes, like, right now we're learning about opinions. Like, hey, I might have my different opinion, you might have yours, and that's perfectly fine. I was like, in this world, we all might have different opinions, you know, but there's also a certain way to, like, you know, say your opinion, you know, more of, like, not trying to, like, be mean or any way, you know. So, yeah, I definitely try to incorporate a lot of that in culture in the classroom, just for them to be, you know, knowing it. And before I do, I always let them know, like, hey, you know what? You guys don't have to agree with me, and that's perfectly fine. Like we said, we have different opinions, right? But I just want to expose to you guys, like, hey, this is what we have out there, and, you know, we might see it around in our classroom or maybe outside our classroom.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you, Travis and Alondra. Everyone's celebrities here.
Yeah.
And you guys can get some snacks on the way out. Teachers always need to be well fed. All right. Okay, so we're going to transition now to Kip Forward. And so thank you, Stephanie. You all have a great rest of the day. So here we have Lonnie and Diana. And, you know, thinking about our teachers are teaching our little tiny Kipsters, and then they grow up. And they become KIPP alums, and then they become adults and are living life.
Yeah.
KIPP Forward is a new name, formerly KIPP through college. And Lonnie and Diana are here today to talk about really the evolution of our program offerings for our KIPPsters as they go beyond the walls of our classroom. So I will click for you, Lonnie, and I know you can do your own little fabulous introductions if you want, but here they are.
Okay. Thank you, Angela. Good afternoon, everyone. Wow, it's a lot of beautiful faces in this space. So I am Lonnie Webb. I am the director of our KIPP Forward program. I have been working with KIPP SoCal for now over 10 years. When I first started on the KIPP college team, I was working with our college age alumni, supporting them with persistence and completion. And then throughout my 10 years, I have worked on our college match team, which is our team that supports our high school alumni. And I've been a director for a year and a half. So I'll turn over to Diana to share more about herself.
Hi, everyone. My name is Diana Rodriguez, and I'm the Associate Director of Post-Secondary Success and Career. It's a long title, but I basically oversee our support and services to our post-high school alumni. I've been with KIPP very similar to Lonnie, more than 10 years as well. And fun fact, I actually started on the high school placement and transition department, then I moved into college match, and now I'm supporting our
I'm very happy. Yeah. Another fun fact, I love sharing this. Me and Diana have known each other for 12 years because we went to USC together.
Always recruiting.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about what KIPP Forward is. So, yes, we are formerly known as KIPP Through College. We officially changed our name last July, and this was a part of the KIPP Network. The national network had changed the name from KIPP to College to KIPP Forward. We embraced it. And I know as you think about KIPP Forward, you're like, ooh, that name, it's not as descriptive as KIPP through college. However, the name itself actually has a lot of powerful meaning behind it. And so the work that we're doing with KIPP Forward is we are still focusing on guiding our students on their path to and through college. However, now we're adding in that new element of career integration and opening up the paths that we've been supporting students on. So traditionally, we've been supporting students with going to 4 and 2-year colleges. That's what we've been doing. But now within KIPP Forward, and especially if you think about our organization moving towards being anti-racist, we need to be more inclusive about how we are providing equitable counseling support to our students. And so now we're opening up where we're supporting students with, you know, talking about career technical education programs. We also are supporting students who may decide that they want to enroll in military. We have students, we have a good number of students who leave high school and they don't know what they want to do. Our aim is, though, we want to still support students with enrolling in some type of post-secondary education, because we know having a degree, having a certificate is going to open and increase their earning potentials. And ultimately, we're trying to guide our students to getting into the career that they ultimately want. Other area is that every year we're growing. We are growing, growing, growing. So now we're supporting over 9,000 students and alumni, starting in middle school, all the way up until they complete their post-secondary education program. One aspect, too, within KIPP Forward, so again, we were normally tracking 2- and 4-year completion, persistence. Now we're going to be adding in where we're tracking career technical education as well as military. We're kind of coding that under progressive pathways. So speaking of outcomes, I want to move to the next slide to just share a couple of data points with you all. So the first point on the right-hand side is our college matriculation for the class of 2022, which is our most recent class that just graduated from high school. So when we say college matriculation, this is basically when a student is in their high school senior year, it is basically where they decide to go after high school. And we start tracking that data in the spring of their senior year, all the way up until actual enrollment in college in the fall time. And so on the right side, or left side, we have our 4-year matriculation rate, as well as our 2-year, and then we have the new area in the green, which is the progressive pathways, which is encompassing our career technical education, as well as military. And then on the right side, we have our students who are either not decided that they were not gonna enroll in a post-secondary education program, or it's just unknown. So for the class of 2022, we have 630 students that are a part of this cohort, and it's a 56% college matriculation rate. One of the things that I wanna add is that we do within our college matriculation is we have a strong transition program. Exiting high school and thinking about going to college is exciting for most students. Like, yes, I'm gonna be a college student, I'm leaving home, I'm getting an adult, yes. But for some of our students, the reality really sits in, and our counselors support our students with making sure that they do successfully enroll in college so that we can prevent summer melt. And summer melt is essentially when a student says, I'm gonna go to this school, and then life happens. And it's a variety of different reasons why a student may not decide. And so our counselors are working with our students to make sure that they are enrolling and then also providing them with the resources. And one resource that we do provide our students with successfully enrolling is financial support, trying to minimize those financial barriers that typically occur, such as enrollment fees, simple things, for things that might be simple for us as having an iPad, having technology, being able to pay for parking. We've been paying for students gas just for them to actually drive to school. These are things that would actually prevent a student from not enrolling. And so we're very grateful for the funding that we've been able to have to provide that to our students. On the other end, as I think of a student getting ready to go to college, the other chart I have on here is our college completion rate. And so within higher ed, we typically track college completions within a 6-year range. And so the data I have for you all is tracking our students who have been out of high school for at least 6 years. I added 2017 in there. So same areas that we're tracking the fall away from 4-year to unknown. And so we have 51% of our students who have completed college, which is exciting to see because that is where we're working towards. But then the other area I really want to call out is that really high percentage in the gray mark. We have about 49% of our students who we either don't know have completed college or have not actually enrolled in college at all. So our goal as a KIPP Forward team, as we think about career integration, as we think about opening up the pathways and supporting students with multiple pathways, my goal or our goal is that we want to be able to decrease that grade and see an increase in these other bars, especially within the progressive path, progressive paths. So I'm going to turn it over to Diana, who actually is going to speak more about the college enrollment, the middle piece, what's happening there, but then also share with you more about the work that we're doing within the progressive paths.
There we go.
Okay, perfect. So currently for our post-secondary success and career model, we are supporting about 700 alumni. And this is our model broken down into two. So we have our college success counselors, and then we have our career pathway counselor. However, our goal is that all of our alumni are aware of the different post-secondary options that are available to them and that they're able to choose whatever is their best fit. So when students go ahead and let us know that they want to pursue a four-year or a two-year degree, then we go ahead and assign them to our college success counselors. Our college success counselors are equipped to support our alumni with whatever they need. We had a pandemic. A lot of our students had classes online, right, which really impacted them. So now that they're back in person, it's been navigating. I don't know where the financial aid office is at. I don't know where this is at. So our college success counselors are really intentional with their support of moving those alumni to those services on campus. Another thing with the strong transition that Lonnie mentioned earlier, we had a great process this year, in particular for our class of 2022, where we had match counselors and success counselors work collaboratively and make sure that students don't slip through the cracks, that they know who to reach out to for support, and again, that they are able to complete all of those steps to successfully show up to class the first day of, and be ready to go, right? Kind of shifting into our career pathways counselor and the work that they do. Any alum who say that they're going to do a CT, career technical education pathway, an apprenticeship, or military, they are assigned to our career pathways counselor, Brian. So these are students that are deciding not to pursue a traditional four-year or two-year pathway. With Brian, he also has a couple of students that may be undecided, and his role is also to be very intentional in helping alumni with that pathway and making sure that they know what resources there are and that he can help them to eventually enroll. That's the main goal, that we want students to choose a pathway, right? You guys are probably wondering, what is career technical education? Or can you give me a refresher on it? Right? So in career technical education, these programs specialize in field trades, applied sciences, modern technology, and it's all with the goal of preparing students to be able to enter into their career pathway and hit the ground running. These programs tend to be more hands-on, and they're shorter in length than a four-year, two-year program. And the goal is to receive a certificate, a license, or a credential. So it could be a variety of things. Some common or some popular CT programs that our alumni are interested are barbering, auto body, nursing. Those are just some to give you an idea. One thing that I want to also make a very important distinction with is that sometimes pursuing these CTE programs requires more steps than a traditional four-year or two-year pathway. So I'm going to give you an example. We have an alumni named Fidel. He's in San Diego, and he wants to pursue, he wants to be an electrician. So he's going through an electrician union program out in San Diego, and one of the requirements is that he get a driver's license, right? So for an 18-year-old, he doesn't know what he needs to do. So that's a prime example of how our career pathway counselor is really intentional and like saying, okay, let me guide you through this process. That way you can fill the requirement to enroll into this CTE program. As opposed to our four-year and two-year pathway students, that's something that is kind of optional, right, for them to enroll. So that is something that I want to really highlight, that he's taking that time to really sit with students and make sure that they're fulfilling the requirements to enroll
and then eventually persist. Next slide. I also wanted to talk a little bit about Genevieve, who is our class of 2022 alumni, and some of the different steps that our career pathways counselor took with Genevieve. So during the fall of 2021, this was Genevieve's senior year, our match counselor actually recommended that Genevieve meet with our career pathways counselor for a variety of reasons. Genevieve was repeating her senior year for the second time. She had really low self-confidence, and she was really unsure about what to do after high school. The only thing she knew is that she didn't want to pursue a traditional four-year or two-year pathway, and she also knew that finances were very important to her. She did not want to pay out of pocket. So these were great things that Brian leveraged to try to be very intentional with his support. So one of the things he advised Genevieve to do at that point is to apply for FAFSA, right? To keep her options open because, you know, she might enroll in a four-year, two-year program after all, after doing some exploration. So he wanted to make sure she was set up. Kind of moving into May and June, that's when our strong transition efforts happened between match counselors and our college success counselors and career pathways counselor. And during this time, again, they were working very closely, very collaboratively to make sure that Genevieve knew who she should reach out to for support and to explore some different programs, right? As a result, she took the U Science Assessment, which is a career aptitude test. And then she decided she wanted to be a sheriff officer. So she shared that with Brian. So that's the pathway that I'm really interested in doing. And then kind of going into the summer, he spent a lot of time working with Genevieve to make sure she understood that pathway really well. So, okay, what skills are you going to get out of this? What experience? Just to make sure that she was confident in her choice, right? And so he also looked at a program, a police academy program at Rio Hondo College, and he was able to say, why don't you check this program out and see if this is something that's for you? Fast forward to August 2022, Genevieve decided, yes, I love this program. I want to enroll. And right now she's enrolled at Rio Hondo. She's taking her courses and she's still getting this strategic advising support from Brian. So it took many steps, but luckily he was able to start early with Genevieve and link her and make sure she has multiple check-ins to make sure she's not staying off track. So that's been one of the very instrumental pieces of having someone dedicated to this.
We'll pause here for questions or a comment.
I would say as the elementary principal, Genevieve, who knew her when she was in kindergarten, had a little... And just seeing the support, like, all the way through, right, and, like, how it's living in this room. Like, this is the power of what we do at KIV, and it's just a really beautiful thing. And just so much gratitude for all the continued support and all the stages throughout, you know, of supporting Genevieve and so many. So,
yeah. So absolutely. I'm glad that we were able to catch Genevieve because she's the example of a student who perhaps would have been really lost and would have just been out of high school and trying to figure it out. And so I'm really glad that we were able to engage her. And Brian, our current pathway counselor, was able to support her with enrolling in Rio Hondo. And then we're continuing to support her with persisting in. Thank you, Amber, for asking.
Are there any more are there any there's a final slide, but are there any questions around career, the strategic? Go ahead, Bill.
To what extent have these so-called critical pathways been upended by COVID, and how have the counselors responded to that?
Can you repeat your question where you're referring to the non-traditional or traditional?
Sorry?
The traditional, I think the traditional, like how much did COVID upend the traditional pathway? Like what did you all see in the pandemic?
Funny about this the other day is many students didn't end up enrolling because of finances. The pandemic hurt people in various ways, and a lot of their parents lost their jobs. They were unable to access certain things, so finances was a big piece of them not enrolling. And then, like I mentioned, the virtual environment was really challenging for a lot of our alumni that are used to navigating things in person. In particular, with math classes and applied classes like science, that was really, really challenging to do online. So for those who did enroll, that was something that we needed to solve.
Yeah. In addition to that, this mental health was really, really weighing on our students heavily. And just the thought of like, okay, I'm trying to go to this school. I'm trying to navigate what's happening with my family. I need to take care of myself as well was very overwhelming for our students who are enrolled in the traditional path. However, though, we were able to provide some financial assistance for our students even when counseling support. Because that was something that came up for a lot during the pandemic, even for us as professionals too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Julie, you have a question?
So can we go back to the first slide that had the pie chart? So this was 2022, and it compares to 2021, which actually looks pretty good. How do these compare to our peers? And I know that, college has always been the guiding star, and I completely understand the need for alternatives. But when parents evaluate, how do you explain it to them so that they understand that a non-traditional four-year college is a good outcome for the right kid, so that the parents are equally comparing us to, other schools. And we've always been, one of the things that always drew me to KIPP was that our stats were so good, right? We were getting more kids to and through college and whatnot. So how does that look today, both compared to our peers and I guess KIPP in general?
You guys can talk about the comparison. Generally, in fact, I was just with the other executive directors this week, and we were talking about high schools. I know that's a loaded question in this room since we don't have one, but our alumni performance is at or above most of the regions that have high schools. So like our college matriculation. So we do very well compared to like the KIPP peers across the nation as it relates to college, 4-year or 2-year. I think for us too, like when we when you walk into any of our KIPP schools, elementary through middle, every classroom is still named after a college, right? We still like, that is the narrative. Like we know the difference a college education makes in someone's life. And as the kids get older, and as we think about what inclusivity looks like in our schools, we always want to make sure one, our students have a real choice on if you want to go to college or not. We talk about college, but it is centered pretty heavily. And we also know that like at the end of the day, we want you to be happy. And so when the students get to 7th and 8th grade is where we start to see they're questioning, like I can work at Google right now. Like some of them probably could. And so that's where we want to make sure we start to with the families embed, like here's the other pathways so that they don't get lost. They have the resources. If that's the path that they choose. But when you walk into a KIPP school, it still feels very college focused, and we intend to keep it that way.
Because I know certainly when parents look at our KIPP schools as prospective schools, the college matriculation has always been a big selling point. So I don't know how you incorporate this data so that the parents understand it and that they know that the guiding one still is.
Yes.
For your
yeah. And that's what our parents want. They tell us that we want to come to KIPP because you guys talk to our alums and our families, the older, and that's still like why they came to KIPP in the first place.
It's exactly it. So we're not losing sight of like skill. We still aspire for our students to obtain a BA degree. However, even just in my 10 years of working with students, like I've had students who have enrolled in college and it was like, this was not what I necessarily wanted to do. And then that started to impact their own mental well-being because they weren't really making the choice that really was fulfilling for them. And so we're still working with our families and students to, share with them more about BA completion at the same time, like Angela just said. So we want students to be able to make that choice. We want students to be able to see their dreams and know that this is my dream, this is my path, and I'm not being directed or told, like, I gotta go to this path, but that's not for me. But with our students in 7th and 8th grade, we're starting to talk about various careers, exploring career exploration. When they get into high school, we're getting more career education. So by the time they're in 12th grade, they're able to really make a solid decision on where they want to go.
All right, thank you.
So I think it's great that we're expanding the funnel, I guess. I mean,
yeah.
Not every kid is meant to go to college, no matter how much we want every kid to go to college.
We do. Yeah.
Right. So I think it's great that for the ones that aren't either interested or feel like they need something else, that we are giving them options. So I just want to say kudos on that. Back to Julie's question on, like, by neighborhood, for example, if you look at, if they're not in a KIPP school or a charter school and they're going to the local public schools, you know, do we have stats on what percent of those kids wind up matriculating, wind up graduating from college that we can compare it to? Because I know there's broad data on that, but do we have specifics for our
school? For like LA?
Or LA, where our schools are, so particular.
I've been at LA County recently. But not by neighborhood, right? So we think LA County is very wide, and the college completion rate for LA County was just under 30%.
That's so for all students. That's for all. Students,
that's, right, that includes the
parents.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
So that's off the top of my head data point that I would have to share. And then KIPP nationally, the KIPP network does some of the data. So I believe it was
37 nationally, and then 11% from students who come from low-income backgrounds for college completion.
11% is a comparison for kids that are in KIPP schools.
It's been between, over time, between 4 is the lowest I think we've ever seen in a given year to like 11% is students who come from similar backgrounds as our kid is college completion. So we are well above that.
Do you have any idea as to all our kids, once they go into high school, what percentage of them reach out to you or connect with you? Because I imagine that there's a certain percentage that we just lose contact with, whether it's intentional, not intentional, you know, they decide not to. Do you have any idea? And can you talk a little bit more about that?
I want to talk a little bit about the successful contest. I don't have like an exact percentage, but I want to say a little bit about our support with going from high school placement and transition to then into supporting students in high school. We try to build partnerships with the local high schools, right? And that's one way to engage with the alumni that are there. And then, I mean, there's programming, they do call-a-thons as well to try to get a hold of those students and let them know that their services. But I don't have the advising numbers off the top of my head. That's something I can definitely
just like the numbers. So last year we had over 2,000 successful contacts with high school students, which was pretty great.
Throughout all the years.
That's from 9th all the way 9th to 12th grade. Yeah, and that's pretty good because we actually were able to benefit a little bit from the pandemic by being able to have virtual advising meetings with students. And then we're also able to engage parents to come to those advising meetings too.
Well, we have more content for you all today. This is the beginning of our meeting, but Lottie, can you take us out?
Our alumni are enrolled. These are some of the popular universities that they're at and colleges. We have quite a few students at Cal State LA and East Los Angeles College. Those are the biggest feeder schools we have. Community colleges for our San Diego alum. Many of them are at Mesa College. From LA, we also have students at LA Trade Tech, which is down the street. And then career training programs. I wanted to share a little bit about the Abram Friedman Occupational Center. It's also down the street. We have a variety of CTE programs, and we actually just had a presentation for undecided, unenrolled alumni
to connect them to this resource and seeing if that's like a pipeline that we can build out. Again, this is brand new work, but it's something we're exploring, and hopefully we can build those pipelines so alumni can have access to that and enroll. So,
go ahead.
I'm just going to close out.
Yep.
So hopefully this gave a better picture of like where we're at, where we're going, right? A lot of the career work is new, but we really want to emphasize again, like as we broaden our services, we broaden our alumni base, right? And we get more students or alumni involved. But yeah, we're looking forward to, you know, what's coming up. So thank you all. And then if there's additional questions, we can take them.
One last question. So when they're graduating from eighth grade, you're in contact with them before they leave, so they know that this is a resource they're going to have throughout high school?
Yeah, so we have a fully built out high school placement in the transition program. So we have they're a part of our HIP 4 team. Okay. So we have a counselor at each of our middle schools that has a 7th, 8th grade class.
Yeah. They actually start in 7th grade doing the work.
We're doing it in the garden now.
The whole presentation in itself. Okay. She's in 8th grade. thank you. Thank you, Lonnie. Thank you, Diana. Isn't this fun having like our team come and present? Okay, we've got more.
As much fun as Zoom.
All right, so next, I'm so excited to hand it over to Ms. Queenie Johnson. Here she is new to KIPP SoCal. She is our first ever director of equity. And she's going to go over our journey, but KIPP SoCal has been on a journey to make sure that we are becoming an equitable and anti-racist organization. And so it's so exciting to have a person that's dedicated to this work and helping us just find our way and become better for our KIPPsters. And so we have a proposal that we're going to ask you all to vote on today. So we'd love your attention as Ms. Queenie presents our anti-racist standards.
Thank you, everyone.
Oh, wait. You want me to start here?
You can start there.
Okay.
So my goal today is just to really showcase how KIPP SoCal is raising the bar to ensure educational equity for our 10,000-plus students that we're serving. We're really excited by this because with the development of our anti-racist policy and standard, our students will be promised an environment of psychological safety, a deep sense of belonging, and equitable access to resources. So I'm proud to present our process today. But first, I want to share a little bit about myself because it's my first time seeing you. I actually come to this work in the spirit of Mary McLeod Bethune. If you don't know who she is, she was a policy advisor to Eleanor and Franklin Roosevelt. She sat on the Black cabinet, and she's one of the first Black women to have a statue in the rotunda. This is like a big deal. And so I come with her fire and her spirit, but also her allyship that she had. And a quick story about her that I think is really important to show her dignity and grace. She built a school, and there was this white guy who was terrorizing the students. And she was so dynamic, she made a friend of him, and he ultimately ended up protecting the students at the school. And he was like, whoever messes with Mary and her students, I got your back. So I come to this work with that spirit. I'm an anti-racist educator. My specialty is in persuasive communication, which simply means is I help everyday leaders communicate the value of interrupting and interrogating racism in their sphere of influence. And that's really important because when people come to this work, they often think that they have to be like Martin Luther King. You don't. You just have to do it in your sphere, whether it's in your home, in your community, or in your workplace. And I'm very proud of that. My personal mission is to see America be great, really be great, and be a global competitor. And I'm really excited by the presentations that just went before me because we are raising citizens who will be that marker of, in that standard of excellence. Currently, I am enrolled at the University of Southern California in their Global Executive Doctoral Program. I'm a doctoral candidate, which means your girl is 7 months away from having her doctorate degree. I'm so excited. Which means that it is for experienced senior executives who are committed to improving educational outcomes at a large scale. But there's something very unique. We get to travel the world and interrogate global economies and really dig into how do they deal with the challenges of educational equity within their context.
And so as Lonnie and Diana were speaking the entire time, my like heart was fluttering because I was just in Singapore. And Singapore, one of the things, they have a great educational system. And one of the things that they're working on is widening the options for their students as well. And they're looking at creativity as a path. So we are on the right direction. I want to share with you a little bit about my work and what I do here at KIPSU. My work falls into 5 buckets. The first bucket is around policies and procedures. So today I'm sharing with you one of the main policies that I help to sort of spearhead and guide. Secondly, I work with partnerships and consulting. So that can look like my first partnership in consulting was with Tiffany and her team. And we looked at, okay, big kids start showing up. How do we make sure that we have equitable access for all the attendees who come to the event? And so that work was a great way for me to be introduced to KIPP and for us to really have a foundation for having equity and anti-racism be embedded in everything that we do, from the classroom to our events to our partnerships. And the consulting piece could look like a school leader who calls me up and say, hey, Ms. Queenie, we're having this equity challenge either with a family, a student, our practices, and we want to think through what are some possible ways that we can move forward in a way that reflects our goal as KIPP. This next batch of work is around training and development. I have the pleasure of working with Adriana and James, who lead our school leader fellows and developing their competencies around anti-racism and equity so that they can begin to embody it themselves and then go back and train their staff for how to be an anti-racist leader in the classroom. We look at assessment and evaluation. And finally, most of our work also is around guiding and advising the change team. The change team is the governing body who oversees the anti-racist work that we're doing here at KIPP. But then there's also this other thing that I get to do, which is really fun for me. And I get to do some futuristic thinking, right? That's where I get to sit with team members, community members, students, and really imagine what can look like. What are the possibilities for KIPP? And in that process of us thinking through what could a beautiful, amazing dynamic KIPP look like, it also gives us room to think about the steps to doing that. But even with all this imagination happening, it's oftentimes important to take a step back and really look at where we've been. So I want to give you like a historical overview of the work that we've been doing to be proud of ourselves, that we've really dedicated ourselves to this work. So in 2016, there were a group of team members who came together and they said, listen, we see disproportionality across the region and we want to acknowledge it, address it, and do something about it. And so they ended up forming a social justice steering committee. So shout out to those people who were really pioneers in helping us to be committed internally to do this work. Around 2020, we started to engage in a series of workshops. Namely, we worked with Overcoming Racism with Matthew King Pate, and there was a lot of positive outcome from those sessions. We also did a culture assessment with Level Talent. And then we were able to take that work that we were doing from our steering committee, from the workshops. And then in September of 2021, we were able to solidify a partnership with Achievement Network. Now, Achievement Network, they are a leader in supporting schools across the country with operationalizing their commitment to anti-racism. So it's not enough just to say you want to do it. You actually have to sit down, map it out, and plan it so that it can be institutionalized and pipeline through the decision-making, policies, and procedures. So that means in January of this year, we actually formed the change team. So I just want to shout out all the good leaders in the room. Can you just raise your hand if you were on the change team, look around? Yes, thank you for your volunteer time and your commitment. So that change team kicked off, and what we were able to do is come together and envision what would a set of standards look like for our school. But in order for us to do that, we used an anti-racist diagnostic to really get the pulse of the organization. We administered the diagnostic to both our students and our team members. We took that data, and from that data, we were able to surface themes, patterns, ask ourselves questions, interrogate what we felt like was discrepancies between what people felt and what the data was showing, and we created 5 domains for where we felt like our standards would fit. So I want to give you a second to take a gander at these domains and the different buckets. And these were based off of our data.
If you notice, domain number two is in orange, and it's there because that's the domain where we focus in what do we want our students to experience and what supports do they need in order to experience that feeling when they come to school. So can you go to the next slide really fast? So I just want to kind of pull the curtain back to show you how we were able to arrive at those domains. So this is a sample slide of a diagnostic data from our students. So if you look at the question reads, most of my teachers support students of all different identities to be themselves without judgment. And if you notice, the darker blue means strongly agree, and this orange down here is somewhat disagree. So at this time, we can see that most of our students, even, and it's broken down by race here, feel pretty strong that their teachers don't judge them. That's actually really good. But that doesn't mean that we dismiss the students over here in the orange who don't necessarily feel that way, or the people in the gray who neither agree or disagree, okay? When we look down here where it says most of my teachers hold space for students to voice concerns, we notice that the strongly agree sort of dips a little bit. So there's something that's happening, and then we notice that there's an increase in our Native Americans who feel like they're somewhat disagreeing with that sentiment. So we interrogated this data. We talked about this data as a committee, and we said, you know what? Go back to that previous slide. Yeah. We need to make sure that our student has support and that they have an experience where they feel heard. And in order for us to do that, we want to also make sure that we have professional development and leadership for our team members so that they can provide that support for students. So that's just a small sample of how we were able to look at the data in order to inform how we develop the domains. We have been collecting feedback from all of our community members, and most of our community members have said one thing across the board. From parents to students to team members, they all have said that domain two, which is our student support and experience, is the most impressive and inspiring standard for them. So this is Savannah Jackson. She's here with some of our students, and she asked them, she did a feedback session with them. This is from our lower school, asking them what inspired them about the standards and why do they believe that this anti-racism policy and standards would support KIPSOCAL and its mission. And some of the feedback was that they felt that it would help people realize that they can speak to people and get help from teachers if they like to express it. Others said it helps adults see what a student wants and how to make a change. But this right here really got in my heart. Like, it just spoke to me. It said it makes students want to be present and have a genuine desire to learn. So when our students are reading and experiencing the standards, what they feel is a sense that there are some adults who are going to care for them and inspire them to want to be in the environment. This, for me, is why I said in the beginning that KIPSOCAL has raised the bar and what educational justice actually looks like. Because our students, when they read the standards, they felt it, and they saw our intent, desire to see them grow in a way that was meaningful. So when we look at our policy and standards, what does that actually mean for KIPSOCAL? Well, the first thing is that it means that we're acknowledging our own power and our own responsibility to take a leading stance against systematic racism and all forms of bias. These standards will actually provide a direction for us. They'll end up being like our North Star. So when we create any policy, programs, decision-making, rituals, we'll reflect back on the standards to see how our goals and desires match and align with our anti-racist standards. These standards and policy will also demonstrate our commitment to our family. As I said earlier, these are standards for us. For our students, they're their rights. And for our parents, these are the expectations that they should have of us as an organization. This next one is really important. These standards guide us into understanding what does anti-racism look like at KIPSOCAL. So when you go into any school, although the form of it may be different, the essence of it should be the same. Every child across our organization should feel that deep psychological safety. They should feel the sense of belonging, and they should have access to resource equity. But not only our students, our families and our team members should feel that as well. This makes me the most proud that if we succeed in adopting this anti-racist policy and standards, we'll be the first CMO in the nation to have a detailed, comprehensive anti-racist standards guiding our work. That is like, oh my God, that is so amazing. Organizations across the nation do have anti-racist aims, but the standards are not as clearly defined and named as what we have presented today. And I'm gonna share this story with you. When I was in Singapore, I was standing in the Marina Bay in this big, tall, beautiful greenery, and I was in the Garden Bay, but I was looking out at the hotel that you see in Crazy Rich Asians, the Marina Bay, and I was asking myself, if KIPP students were here with me, do our standards help prepare them for a global world? Will they be able to not just compete? Will they be able to participate? Will they be able to thrive? And I sat back and I was grappling with that the entire time I was out of the country. And the answer is with these standards, yes, they will be able to do that. And I even showed them to my professor, who's a leading researcher in anti-racism and equity in education. And the one thing he said to me is, I am so impressed by these standards. I've never seen an organization name it as explicitly as you all have done here today. So what I share with you, when I said earlier that we have raised the bar, we have raised the bar for what educational equity looks like. Thank you all so much.
Wow. So, of course, if there's questions, we want questions. But one of the big steps is that we want people to know that we're serious, and a formal board vote helps everyone understand that 100% of our stakeholders in our organization, from our board all the way down to our students or with our students, believe in this framework to really make us a better organization. And so we'll take questions before, but we are going to ask for a formal vote so that we can officially be official and have a policy and the standards adopted by KIPP SoCal. But we'll take questions. And Ms. Queen, thank you. That was so wonderful. Thank you so much for that presentation. Any questions? And Bill? Oh, no.
No, I was just reading it because I guess is the point anti-racist is also inclusive of racial, ethnic, linguistic, and sexual orientation.
Yes. Okay. Correct.
Yes, I'll ask. I already know the answer because, but if I didn't, I would want to know, like, is there specifics on how you're going to operationalize these standards?
That's a great question. That's a question everyone's been asking. And that's actually phase two of our process. So with the change team, we'll be investigating how do we operationalize a path forward. Right now, I have meetings set up with different departments to look at our boundaries and our margins to see what do we have to do based on compliance. To maintain our charter authorization, and then what's feasible with our structures and what needs to be changed and what resources do we need to move forward. So that is our next step.
And we'll be sending out information to the board about joining the change team because we want board member participation. So if you're interested, you'll get follow-up around dates and times, and they're mostly virtual,
yes.
I think.
January 11th is our next meeting at 4 p.m. You'll have access to that. I'll make sure Valen gives you that information. Yes.
I had two questions. Yeah. So my first was, there's a lot in the standards, yeah, reading through them, and I'm wondering if you can just highlight a handful of the biggest changes versus what approved today. If that makes sense. That was one question. And then the other thing that struck me in reading it is there were some probably very deliberate word choices, specifically probably around white supremacy. And I'm wondering if you can just give some visibility into the dialogue and decision-making process
around
some of those word choices that might be more controversial and outside of these.
That's a really good question.
I certainly can. Like Ms. Queenie said, we based the creation of the standards on the diagnostic that we did with students and with team members. There are some or less gaps in any of those standards that are named there within each of the domains. in some areas, we might feel confident in saying that the gap is so small that we're almost there. But in general, we know everything that's on that list is because we noticed there was a need. And we heard from the constituents that that need was important to them. Our services and our programs and the needs themselves evolve so quickly that we are opting not to do a comprehensive gaps assessment, because by the time we complete that, it's obsolete. So we are choosing, like Ms. Queenie said, the operationalizing path, but it's very targeted. So we have a pilot with students and apparently there's another pilot that we're framing still on the academic side, and it's not going to be all things at all times. We have to manage our capacity, but it's certainly work that goes beyond this year, next, etc. It's generational transformation, so it's very long term, long lived. It's a lifelong commitment for this organization. And then your question about language choice, it is very intentional. We built our collective racial literacy through some of the things that Ms. Queenie highlighted in the timeline, and making sure that we were speaking the same language when we talk about racism. What do we mean? What do we say? Anti-racism, non-racism, reverse racism. So we have these conversations and we're choosing them. It's none of those words are an accident. We're challenging ourselves to be as forward thinking as we possibly can right now. And the last thing I'll say about that is that language I know will continue to evolve as our work makes us grow. We will, you know, these will stay alive with tweaks from what we learn. So it's the best right now, but it's, we're probably going to find it a little quaint 5 years from now.
And additionally, the change team also had family members on that. So we had families weigh in. And then the revision, the standards went through, I don't know, 20 drafts before this draft we're asking you to vote on today. And the entire KIPP SoCal team has had eyes on this so that, you know, everyone is aware of what we're doing and have had an opportunity to provide feedback so that, you know, our word choices were criticized and or, you know, appreciated. And, you know, at the end of the day, we made some calls and this is the draft that we're going with.
In every standard, the goal is to improve student learning outcomes. So if it's in there, the goal is for them to have a better learning experience and to optimize their educational equity. That is the goal. And we know that in order to do that, the research shows that you have to have an anti-racist orientation, which is not just about making sure you have what you need to thrive, but making sure that the structures within the system do not stifle your growth. And so the prior presentations that you saw where you could witness the growth and the evolution of the teacher residency program or KIPP Board, it demonstrates how we have shifted our thinking about what's equitable and inclusive for our students by removing barriers that were previously put in front of them that left a lot of students behind. And so I believe that we're truly on the right path to be, like I said, a pioneer in this work, particularly from a charter school perspective. So I want to thank everyone today. Yes.
I just want to kudos to Angela and team, and to, of course, when we were going through our CEO transition and we did talk to all of our different actions of our school, our parents, our teachers, you know, our administrators, everybody. And this was foremost on the mind, and just the amount of progress they've made so quickly is fantastic. Thank you. Really impressive.
Randy?
So I understand we adopt these, we have a change group plan or to figure out what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. How are we measuring or planning to measure impact, you know, kind of positive and negative? Like, yeah, you know, are we moving the needle on the things that are important? And are some things changing that we, like, there's always unintended consequences, and how are we catching them?
Well, Ms. Queenie will be able to speak to it more, but Go ahead.
What I will say is that part of our phase two is meeting with different departments, like I shared, and really identifying how can we measure our success in these areas. Each of these standards in themselves, each strand would need to have its own rubric to kind of see where we're at on the path, because you're not going to just jump to mastery. Maybe someone's at a level one, that's still progress, versus another school that may be on a level three. So again, to Michelle's point, all of these standards can't be rolled out tomorrow, right? These are so robust and so dynamic. There's a lot of internal development that we have to have ourselves. And so we're going to take it thoughtfully and strategically, and we're going to look at what do we already have that's working really well, that we're just like, we're close to being successful, and we want to start there. Or we want to see one that would actually, if we worked on this standard, it would actually increase our student learning outcomes immediately and quickly tomorrow. So that's another one we would want to adopt. So measurement, we're going to look at that with the change team. We're working with our achievement network partner to help us identify what are some ways that we can measure success. That's a really great question, and I would love your participation on the change team.
Talk to Angela about giving me an option.
All right, so we need a motion, boss.
Any other questions, comments? No? All right. Well, the motion before you is to adopt the anti-racist policy standards to begin rolling out during the 2023-2024 school year and provide KIPP SoCal management the authority to update as needed. Do I have a motion? Nancy? Do I have a second? Mel, second. Melen?
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Bill?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
I'm going to state for the record that Norma arrived around 2:20. Norma?
Yes.
And then also Nancy arrived about 1:30. Nancy?
Yes.
Naeem?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
Everyone.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We're going to take a break
because
there's a lot. So 5 minutes. I know that's like herding cats, but there's snacks. Restrooms are to the right. For men, it's immediately to the right. And for women, down the hall, there's an all gender inclusive restroom down the hallway to the left.
you, everybody. And Joanna, thank you very much for taking everybody here. Keep it in control. All right, so we're moving on to next agenda item.
Okay, let's see. Milan, you might need to hit the slide once it gets activated. Let's see. Okay, while you all figure that out, Jen, can you help Belen maybe with the flip to the next slide? So the next listen, Jen, director of all things tech, chief problem solver. Our next topic, we are going to talk about KIPP Pueblo Unido and the enrollment challenges. Thank you, the expert. And the enrollment challenges that we've been experiencing. I'm looking forward to discussing solutions today. I've spent some time with the governance committee on this topic. And so both Kyle and I are gonna go through some information and we look forward to your questions and ultimately hopefully support of a decision. So I'm gonna start with the end game that I'm looking for. I just don't wanna hide the ball. And so I'm looking to have the board approve a submission of a material revision to regarding the Pueblo Unido Charter School to change the enrollment from a TK through eighth grade school to a TK through four due to the significantly low enrollment that we are seeing in the upper school. I'm going to go through what the upper school enrollment challenges look like, the impact to program and the impact to fiscal. I'm going to talk about the lower school progress and updates, followed by some next steps and stakeholder engagement, and I'll take questions along the way. I just wanted to note that I do have Melissa Torres here, who is the school leader for Pueblo Unido Lower School. She and I have spent a lot of time together in the last few months talking about challenges, along with Caitlin Johnson, who is our upper school leader. And so I invited her to come because I wanted her to hear the discussion amongst the board. We believe in transparency and everyone on the same page as we go through these difficult decisions. So I'm going to start with the Pueblo Upper School enrollment. So on this slide, you can see the percentage of available seats enrolled since the beginning of the upper school. It started with sixth grade in 2020. A 21 school year. And then below you see the actual student enrollment. And you can see also just little anecdotes around what was happening and the facility situation at the time. So the headline here is there's been a significantly decline in enrollment in the upper school. And currently we have 71 enrolled students across sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. What this looks like compared to other middle schools enrolled in the first year. So these are all the middle schools that have opened, you know, quote unquote newest, even though Scholar and KSA are 10 years old now. But you can see what it looks like over the first 5 years of the charter term, the first term of the charter. That little dot is generations. At our school that opened in August, but you can see actually it's one of our highest enrolled middle schools in its first year. But we've never experienced a dip like this before in the opening of an upper school to go in by its third year to see a decline and reach the enrollment that it was in its first year of existence. This leads to some significant program challenges that in the school. And so here's the breakdown of this number of students in each grade level. We have 10 sixth graders, 26 seventh graders, and 35 eighth graders. Typically, you know, our middle schools have about 125 students in a grade level, one grade level. So if you think about a KIPP, you know, KIPP LA Prep in sixth grade, there's about 125 students. And the program we provide, the instructional and support staff is there's a math teacher, a social studies teacher, English, PE, science. There's typically an elective, maybe even two. There's a SPED, SPED counselors. That's mostly determined by the number of students. There's definitely a counselor at this point, you know, depending on the year of growth of a school. And there's a robust after-school enrichment program or offering. That's a typical KIPP program. But with an enrollment like this, it brings significant challenges of what we can offer. Well, one, you can see it's 71 students across three grade levels. Staffing this is hard because we have single subject teachers in our middle school. And you can't just have teachers teaching different content areas according to their credential. We also can't eliminate a subject because we're trying to align staffing to the students, right? Oh, sorry, you're not going to get science this year. That also isn't going to work. So right now, they are quote unquote technically overstaffed, but the teachers, they have a math, social studies, English, science teacher, and PE, are teaching three different grade levels. So these teachers are preparing for three different grade levels. That's a lot of work. And also, because there's discrepancies between the size of classes, the way you design your lessons is also very challenging. Like what you do for 60 minutes with 10 students in math looks different than what you do, the strategies you use, than for 35 students in a class. And the students are in single homerooms, right? So even the student experience is impacted because the eighth graders are in larger classrooms. And, you know, these are social beings. They don't have a lot of peers. I mean, those are 10, a class of 10. We're unable to provide those extra enrichments. You know, at KIPP, we believe in a well-rounded world-class education that includes the arts, visual and performing arts, and other programs. And we also know how important after-school program is to our students and our family, giving them the extra time and fun and learning that they need beyond the typical school day. So it's been really challenging to truly provide what we promise as a KIPP education with an enrollment of this size. I'll pause for any questions before I move into the fiscal impact. Okay, so the fiscal impact. So, and this is looking at a combination of the lower and the upper. And we'll talk about Kyle later on, we'll talk about the lower school. But, you know, the headline is that Pueblo has resulted in 2 times more the typical non-recurring revenue needed to fully support or to fully grow out the school. You can see that their deficit before philanthropy is $2.3 million after using the one-time ESSER funds. A third of our philanthropy is going to support the school. 17%, if you just think about the upper school, 17% of the total philanthropy is supporting 71 students, which is less than 1% of the entire student population at KIPP SoCal. And you can see that they have received $7.2 million in total non-recurring revenue support since the beginning of the school. And so the fiscal impacts has reached a threshold for us. And Kyle and I have had long discussions in the senior leadership team and then with our school leadership around, you know, what is the correct course forward. I'll pause for any questions. So here's the conclusion that I would like to just stamp, keeping it simple. So due to the significantly low enrollment, we're unable to provide like what a real KIPP education or experience looks like. We believe that sunsetting the upper school grades and running a high quality elementary school is the best path forward. And I'll explain, we'll go on about why we think that's the case. Additionally, I know that sunsetting grade levels comes with a lot of questions that I will be happy to answer, but I just want to let you know now up front that we have already, with this in mind, started to put in place some solutions and pathways for current staff and students in the upper school to continue to have a place here at KIPP SoCal after this year if the board go ahead and approves a change to the charter. PJ.
Second question. This was the idea to was the question going to be to shut down the middle school, you know, right away, or does sunsetting mean that, you know, we'll continue to have, you know, just no more kids will enter and take care of, we'll handle the kids later? Question.
So the question is, what does sunsetting mean, or what's the timeline? Basically, what could that look like? So we would like to sunset both the entire school at the end of the school year. So the upper school would no longer exist after the school year. If you look at these here, so our eighth graders will move on. They're part of our KIPP Forward team. So they would move on, like they are getting the services. So we're looking at, it's 36 students that would be continuing on for next year. And that would be impacted. So, and we have a solution and a plan that I can discuss, that Cecily has helped find a solution so that they can stay within CHIP as we sunset the school, sunset the upper school.
I do want to add that the governance committee met a few weeks ago to discuss this. And Julie, I know you weren't able to make that meeting, but Randy and
it's not on governance anymore, Phil.
I'm sorry, Phil. But Heather and Randy were there, so I'd welcome comments from you as well, because that's the recommendation to go down this path is coming from the governance committee as well.
Maybe I'll just say something here too. I think we had a pretty robust conversation over the course of the time that we had, and at the end of the day, that comfortable with the recommendation is written. I think a big part of it was understanding, and I think this is where you're going right now, a little bit about all the work that's been done for those 36 students that would be adversely impacted by this.
Yeah, so we have, so I decided, what I did not want to do is that we would be in a position where we would have to sunset or close the upper school and tell families and staff in the spring. And so what I did is I met with the entire staff of both the upper and lower school. I met with the families of the upper and lower school, and I communicated to them the same challenges that I'm communicating with you. And I also communicated that I was going to come to the board and ask for this change because I wanted to be as transparent as possible. And so they appreciated that. And when I showed them the data, as I'm showing you, they actually were they understood it. Why we were thinking about and asking to do this. When I met with the upper school families, when I met with the upper school families, their greatest concern was, we love CHIP. They were like, Miss Martinez, please do not send, like, I cannot send my kid to a neighborhood school. Like, it was like one after another, and all of them were there. And I met with the 6th and 7th grade families separate than the 8th grade because there were two separate messages. And I met with them in person because I wanted them to see me, be near me, to understand what we were doing. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to find a way or make one. That's what we do at CHIP. And so we were able to now, then we met with every family one-on-one to understand like what were their preferences and which next CHIP school would they like to attend. Most of them want to attend a school in Southeast Cities. So Comienza, Corazon were the top. There were a few other CHIP schools because of where they live, but because you all approved a policy in the consent agenda that allows current students to be able to attend another CHIP school, and for this particular group of students, they would be able to do that for next year, then all of these students will get to go into their first choice of a CHIP school for next year. And I've talked to the school leaders, especially the school leader is going to take most of them. And she said, I love this. Thank you. I will do it. I will take our students. And so we're going to work through that process. So should this get approved today, we'll start working on what that looks like, that transfer. For staff, we have a transfer policy at CHIP. And so when I met with the staff, they were like, where am I going to go? What happens? What do we do? And so they all, I mean, we have plenty of spaces for teachers to go. And so different issue, but they will go through kind of like a matching process to find out what is the next right best fit school based upon their credential and where there are openings. They do not have to quote unquote like re-interview with CHIP. We want to make sure that they find a good match for them, you know, where they want to be, but and we'll begin that process actually after we come back from winter break. So they've already let us know what are their preferences. And so that's our next step, is to figure out what that placement will look like for them for next year. The other interesting thing is that I was worried by telling families early on that they would just leave our schools right away. And not one family has left since I talked to them. So I think our commitment to being honest and transparent and their investment in CHIP and through this very difficult time has been, I think, a real model of what relationships can do.
How does it seem that I had talked to Angela about it before? And one of the concerns is not doing this is that school board pulls the charter.
Yes.
And one of the things to consider is our new school board, which is
not necessarily a charter friendly school board. One of the things they are looking at is under enrollment. So while it pains me to do this, I think in every way it just becomes the right decision. And I'd rather us control it and control the narrative rather than LAUSD putting them on us. Do you think there's going to be any issue getting the revision?
So I also, we over, Curtis and Lindsay know, we learned our lesson with our charter school division that we should just tell them up front what we're thinking. So we gave them a heads up that we're thinking about this. Then we gave them a notice that we're bringing this to the board. They know I've talked to families first. And so they're aware. I think, I don't see there being opposition against this. I think they'll like this idea. Of course, likely it will be a show at school board meetings when KIPP comes to that. So we'll prepare ourselves for that as well. But, you know, that's, we've had to deal with that before. I'm going to talk through the Pueblo Lower, why we believe in Pueblo Lower, that we can to make things work as we go forward. So I want to start off with, you know, thinking about, often it's like we talk about a demand, but family engagement is strong. So we just gave our family survey in the fall, and you can see I pulled, there's like 12 questions. I pulled three that really talk about like experience and like as a parent, what your child is like feeling and doing in school. And, you know, you can see that many of our families at Pueblo feel like this is the right place for their child. And these, I looked at these results compared to Comienza Lower and also Corazon Lower, and they're on par, right? So the experience is the same amongst the other schools with Pueblo Unido. School leadership is also stable and strong. We did have a school leader transition. However, Tessa, who was the former leader, is remaining at KIPP SoCal. She's joined the teaching and learning team. And because of our school leader fellow program, Melissa has taken the helm. This is her first year. And she's doing an excellent job. And it's really fun to work with her and to watch her in action. Her team really follows her. She takes charge. She's a great leader. And so the leadership is something that we feel really, really great about. Academics is typical. It's not, and I'm going to go over the SBAC data in a little while, but it's not typical of what's happening post-pandemic. I was looking at data this morning in preparation for this meeting and, you know, looking at the MAP scores, and because right now Pueblo Lower is K through three. And so last year they didn't take SBAC because it was K through two. So we don't have SBAC data, but we have other sources of data. Students are growing. They're just not growing at the rate we would like. And the pandemic did slow things down. Their teacher retention is above our KIPP SoCal average, especially during a leadership transition to like be above our average. Now, you know, talent is not the topic for today's meeting, but to be retaining people above our average is a great thing. And then enrollment is the priority. I know when I met with the parents at the lower school, they're like, what can we do about this? I was like, we need you to bring families to KIPP. Like, there's nothing stronger than a family saying to their neighbor, hey, my child goes here, you should bring your child here too. They're like, okay, we're on it. And then the next week, I know Melissa had a cafecito with families to make sure that families are involved. But we've also created an intense recruitment strategy for Pueblo Lower. And just to see like how, what it's looked like compared to our other elementary schools. And our newest school, KIPP Poder, is in its second year. But for the first 3 years of the charter, like we increased enrollment. Like it was on a trajectory. And it was only this year that we saw a decline in enrollment. And so we believe we can get back on track. We want to put everything in that we can to get this, you know, chart to head in the right direction. And that's why I also asked Melissa to be here, because, you know, she's really invested in this. And we believe it's worth the investment to keep going. I'm going to hand it over to Kyle to talk a little bit about how this is also financially sustainable, the path that we want to take forward.
Yeah, so one of the questions I think that came out of the governance committee is, you know, what was or what is the path to sustainability, and is there one, and what are, you know, some of the scenarios of what would impact that? And so we do believe, and well, one, prior to this year, the lower school was on the right, you know, our normal, quote unquote, normal trajectory to becoming sustainable. And we think we can get back on that path even next year if we meet our enrollment targets for next year. So we think if we get to about 440-ish kids, that'll put us at the break-even point for the school. And to put that into context, that's basically one TK classroom of 24 kids, and then three classrooms of students in each grade level, K through four. And that's one classroom less than what we would typically have in a school. So there's still like plenty of upside there as we continue to grow enrollment. We want to go in steps in terms of rebuilding enrollment from where we are this year. The other distinction from the lower school and a middle school is elementary schools have two advantages in terms of reaching financial sustainability over middle schools. One is because there are multiple subject classrooms, we have a lot more flexibility to adjust our staffing ratios relative to enrollment. So if we're short 30 kids in a grade, we can reduce the classroom. We don't have that same flexibility in middle schools. And then our elementary grade levels are actually funded at a slightly higher rate than our middle school. So we get about $750 additional dollars per student per elementary grades than we do for middle school grades. So there's that advantage as well. In the next slide.
Oh, sorry. This is like slow. Come on, catch up. Hold on. There we go.
So this just shows, so the current column, that's where we are this year. There's about a $1.8 million deficit. That's not going to be absorbed by philanthropy. It's about $1 million is being absorbed by philanthropy, and the rest is the state one-time funds. But next year, so the farthest column to the right is where I think we can be if we hit our enrollment targets, and that's with the enrollment numbers I just stated. So you see there, just a bit above break-even. And included in that break-even figure is the normal contribution that a school would make to covering the costs of the SST for the services that we provide. So, they're more than covering the cost to operate the school. In the middle there, I have, kind of a modest growth scenario, which is essentially a few, so still three classrooms in grades one through four, but classrooms that have a few less students, about three less students per classroom, and only three classes total between TK and kindergarten, so one fewer classroom there. And that scenario next year would need a subsidy of about $600,000 to the school. But embedded in that $600,000 is actually a quote-unquote transfer to the regional office for the support that we provide of $900,000. So kind of net-net as an organization, the school would be above break-even. So not a that all makes me pretty optimistic that we should definitely, under Melissa's leadership, be continuing our efforts at the lower school and certainly, reassess where we are next year in terms of enrollment, but certainly keep things going.
Questions so far?
Oh, yeah, go ahead, EJ.
So I just had a question. Is the fact that we're going to be shutting down the middle school, will that impact our ability to keep kids at the lower school, or is there a pretty clear path for the lower school students once they get to fifth grade and younger?
Yeah, so prior to last year, our fourth graders at Raices and Promesa and Illuminar, they all had to go through like the lottery process. And so we've done this before, had to do this work before. We're working with every fourth grade family to get into a KIPP middle school. So this action will prompt us going back to that, having to do that. having Melissa be the leader is helpful because she worked at Kip Promessa and she actually did that work with fourth grade language. So she knows exactly how to do that. So that's also like having her be at Pueblo with this kind of experience gives us a pathway, you know, over time, as I don't know, things change, we could maybe ask the district for, you know, material revisions for other schools to give a preference, but we're going to, with the district, we're going to take one step at a time. With like a guarantee of admission, but for now families will have to go through the typical process that we've done before to get into the to the other Kip middle schools.
So I can just add one point on. I think this also can be a, you know, side benefit to this for our other middle schools is we always have fewer, even for a K-8 school, we always have 20 to 30 fewer fourth grade students than our starting point for fifth grade. And so there's always 20 to 30 kids minimum that we have to go recruit. So this will help hopefully absorb, you know, some of that excess capacity at our fifth, you know, neighboring fifth grade schools. So it will benefit, you know, it will benefit those schools.
Yeah.
So I think just following up on EJ's question though, because we talked about this in governance, you know, I think one of the reasons why we're seeing enrollment dip is because people are on different campuses. So how many of the upper school kids that are going to be going to other schools have lower school siblings? And so, and are they at risk for pulling them out of that school and trying to put it in another kid lower school or?
Yeah, that's, so we met with every single upper school family. So we know, and there's not a lot of siblings. They do have siblings at Comienza, though. We learned that. And so this will actually help bring families together. But we sat with everyone and we're like, what are you thinking? What's your plan? Families are happy with Pueblo Lower. And so they're saying like, we're going to stay. We just want my upper school kid to go to another KIPP school. But once their kid does get into this next KIPP school, the year after that, they can like apply for a lottery to transfer into that school, but it's not, there's only 36 kids. And I think it's less than 5 that have a sibling in the lower school. So it's less than 10 that have a sibling in the lower school and or another KIPP school. So there could be a chance that that could happen.
And what happens? So I know this is the first time we've ever seen a dip. And so super optimistic and hopeful that we will reverse it and go up. But what happens if that number doesn't move for next year?
Yeah, so we have to, this is, you know, when we talked to Melissa about this and Kyle, that we'll have to, I mean, at the finance and governance committees, bring regular updates and annually on a cycle that would make sense for decision-making, continue to have this conversation. Do we continue to operate the school or not? So for, we feel like for next year, okay, it's like this conversation expected to have it again at this time next year.
Okay. Were we surprised by the declining enrollment? And when did we, are there leading indicators that we can look at for the lower schools to make sure that, you know, we have a good pulse on either sentiment or whatever's driving folks?
Yeah. So enrollment is down across the board in general, right? In California, we all see the headlines, birth rates are down. Like there is an enrollment challenge that, you know, we're figuring out and facing. For the lower school, there was a time in the spring last year where, so we broke in from 2 campuses to 3 campuses. There was a time when we weren't sure which grade levels were going to go to which campus and the schools, like the 3 locations are in, you know, Southeast Cities is tiny micro communities and they're across 3 different places of the Southeast Cities. And y'all know LA, like even if it's 3 miles away, I'm not going to a new community. So that presented a challenge for families. So families started to withdraw at a higher rate because of the campus situation. When I met with the families and now we have what our plan is that we maintain our Maywood site, which is our private site that we've been at since the founding of the school. And then we will maintain with the district's blessing, the Prop 39 that we occupy now at Pacific Avenue Elementary. And so families were like, okay, if you can keep us at two campuses, right, and keep us at the same one, like we can make this work. They have asked, like, can we get support with transportation between like the two campuses? So it's something that, you know, we've talked about and based upon finances and decisions, but some of the things that we do are have staggered arrivals and dismissals. So families don't feel like they have to, you know, your kids have to be two places at once at the same time. So finding those sorts of conditions, but facilities, distance was a driver in that. For the upper school, you know, opening in a pandemic, hindsight is 2020. You know, when we shut down in March of 2020 is prime recruitment season for a school, and we can no longer physically recruit children. I think that we ended up enrolling students who live 50 miles away, you know, because then we started recruiting digitally, virtually. And when it was time to come back, you know, we grew a little bit. We didn't have a place for them to come back, really. And then, you know, this three campus situation happened. It was just the perfect storm. From an enrollment perspective and a facilities perspective. I have to say, like, the school's health is not like a driver of why this is happening. And I want to just be very clear with that. Like, we believe in the health of the schools, and even watching Caitlin Johnson, who is also another school leader fellow, run the upper school, you know, she's like, I'm the first like school leader that maybe will have a school. And it's her first year as a school leadership, but she's highly invested. The team is incredible. You know, we work, you know, all their teachers are great. And so, you know, this is really an enrollment driven decision for that. Okay, so we believe this is our case with strong and stable leadership, all the things that we've said, like changing the charter to reflect a TK through four, we think we'll continue to fulfill our promise and our mission. And so the next steps will be for the KIPP SoCal board to approve a material revision today. This would allow us to submit to the district before winter break. Then we have to, of course, go through the process with the district. They will either approve or deny. I put that up there because it's always a factor. And then again, the ongoing closely monitoring the enrollment and engaging in a viability discussion regularly, you know, at regular board meetings, but because governance and finance happen more often, it'll happen in those committee meetings as well. And so this is where more discussion and a motion.
Any further discussion or questions? Motion or motion? I think, yeah.
Also that, I've cried the tears, Randy. I've cried the tears.
All right, Naeem, you have a question?
Yeah, one quick question from a PR perspective. Yeah. Are we doing anything proactively, or are we hoping it kind of goes under the radar, or what's the strategy?
Part of the strategy around communicating to families was to, like, have, like, when we share an announcement to the families, there isn't an uproar. Like, that's why, I mean, our families knew I was coming here today. Like, the communication with the internal has been, and the whole, I've communicated to the entire organization about this. So, like, everyone knows we're in some sort of stage. If it's approved today, then our next step will be to work with our marketing team to see what the message will be. You know, because people who are unfortunately anti-charter will leverage this away. What's interesting is when we communicated about the facility, because we were ahead of the game and we had our own press release, we have not like heard anything in response to that because we own the message. So we plan to similarly own this message this time too.
Okay. No other questions, comments? Okay. So do we have a motion to authorize KIPP SoCal to request a material revision of KIPP Pueblo Unido's charter that will reduce the grade levels served from TK through 8 to TK through 4th, reduce enrollment capacity from 1,050 students to 560 students, and update the school's enrollment projections accordingly. Do we have first? Anybody?
Heather, I'll move.
Heather moves. Second?
I'll second.
Randy? Okay, Milen?
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Norma? Nancy?
Yes.
Naeem?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
That's everyone.
Yes. Motion passes. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everyone. Okay.
You're on.
That was a tough one today. All right, everyone, raise your hands up and stretch. This is what we do with our students to like change the blood flow. Move your legs up, because I still got more meaty topics. First in-person meetings, make it rigorous. Okay. All right, this next part, I talked to you about the stakeholder. This is our SBAC results in 2021. So Scotty and Roxy are going to walk around with a packet. There's like 30 slides of the data. They're all going to be in your packet. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I want you to have access to our SBAC data. So as a refresher, SBAC is the state assessment that we take in California. The last time we took the SBAC was in 2019. We took it in 2019 and then we took it in 2022. So these are the trends. I want to start with the high level trends, that you see. So you can start combing through and I can narrate. You're not going to be surprised. So on average, KIPP SoCal, we saw significant drops in our SBAC achievement levels. This is all in line with the local, state, and national trends. Now, the range of performance is varied and wide, right? So the gaps are bigger. They're wild all over the place, even between different school districts and our local authorizers, the states. It's all over the place. From a student group perspective, our Black student performance continues to be lower overall and compared to their Latino peers. We generally outperformed our local districts for our Latino and ELL student groups. However, the absolute scores for English language learners at KIPP SoCal and across the state and districts is significantly low. It's the lowest student group performance across all student groups in California. The headline is the learning gaps are deep and they're going to take a multi-year approach to intervention. K-2 foundational literacy skills, particularly for our Black and ELL students, are that stand out strongly in our focus area. And then K-8 math for all. It was interesting hearing the presentation from the KIPP Forward team around students struggling in math on their online classes because math significantly declined more than ELA did. And so to see that, hear that all the way through the post-secondary, I was not surprised, but it was hard to hear. So just some highlights, not highlights. Okay. Let me take that back. Hold on. So what you're seeing is some comparison to 2019, though we were told that we're not supposed to compare, but we're KIPP and we always are comparing. So we did. You'll see KIPP SoCal, California, LUSD. You'll see it disaggregated by some student groups. Economically disadvantaged, this is the language that the state uses. I wanted you to see that language in case you see it elsewhere. Race, English language learners, students with disabilities, and then renewal school performance. So I'm going to talk about charter renewals next. We have 4 schools that are up for renewal for the first time since the pandemic. So the declines are the declines. The range, though, of the decline is something to stick out. So for elementary schools, we had a school, Promesa, had the largest loss, I guess, of 35 points to KIPP Empower, who declined just 1 point. And you can see math was even more pronounced. Promesa declined 49 points, with Empower declining 9 points. For middle school, that's a little different. ELA at Seoul declined the most at 18 points. But KIPP Academy of Opportunity increased performance 3 points. And so this is a highlight. John Coleman, who's our school leader, has done tremendous work to stabilize KIPP Academy of Opportunity. We're happy to see us shine in all of this. And so then you can see also with math, a decline of 32, with the most being at Seoul, but with no change for opportunity. Here is how we compare to California and LAUSD. This is through all students, and then you can see the different student groups. Again, for all students, we're below both, and when you sort out for student groups, you can see that our biggest gap for our Black students there, and then on par or above with other, with the state and our biggest authorizer, LUSD. Here's, this is math. Oh, go ahead, EJ.
I just ask, I mean, can we talk about might be driving that, just the, I mean, the all students one, it's easier to understand because it's including schools on the west side. But I would think some of these other comparisons are kind of, well, schools that we would think of as being comparative.
Yeah, I mean, we were, we're still trying to figure that out, actually, because we felt like we did a really great job, the best that we could during the pandemic. And, you know, our students had a lot of needs. And to be honest, I've been reflecting on this, and we prioritize health and safety above academics, even though we did provide an academic program. And I think you can see it in our data. And I asked myself, would I make the same decision again? And I think the answer is yes. When you have like a death rate five times in Boyle Heights compared to, you know, Brentwood and in Watts, I would make the same decision again to prioritize health and safety. I do think, though, I honestly, and I talked to all my peers, it seems like all charters struggled more than districts. And I don't know why that, we don't know. We are all having this conversation about how did that happen? Now, what I can say now is being in classrooms and seeing like, we're actually like the teaching and the learning is happening. I'm excited next year to come to this table with better results. But this has not been.
Basic question. Oh, sorry, quick basic. Mm-hmm. When you say prioritize health and safety, what does that practically mean versus academics or something else? Like what's that?
Yeah. So if you think about like a multi-generational home or our families that are mostly working in jobs that either they either lost their job or they had to work during the pandemic, we gave a lot of grace to students who were like, I can't attend class today because I'm watching my brothers and my sisters, or everyone in my house is sick, or we just lost. Like we had some family households lose the grandparents, then lose a parent. And so we're doing grief counseling versus anything else. And you can see I have school leaders here that are like, yes, yes, and yes.
Or I have five children in five different grades who have this one room to log onto the two shared Chromebooks that we have because the Wi-Fi router supports this Chromebook, and then there's cross-pollination between Wi-Fi networks if you have them too close. And even though we've been provisioned with all of these things, but if you can imagine how, I mean, we're all distracted right now. We've got a couple of phones and a computer. Can you imagine five different classes happening simultaneously? You've got phonics, physics, and motion, and eighth grade science. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
So like the experience is just, it was different. And we were prioritizing. We didn't want families or students to feel like shame because of their circumstance that they were put in the pandemic. So, and we would never do that. So it was very, and you know, when you look at ELA, well, we can see this by other schools and it's sliced up. Like you can't teach phonics over Zoom. And even when we came back the next year, we were all wearing masks. You still can't teach phonics with masks on. And I was so excited. I went into Kippen Power and I was in the second grade classroom. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the kids can see the teacher's mouth. And she's going, all right, when we say the long, oh, like your mouth looks like this. Those students in second grade classroom did not get that in first grade and did not get that in kinder. So they're just coming, getting for the first time, a real phonics lesson with someone in front of them without a mask. And so it's pretty incredible what children have experienced, the disruption to their learning. Randy?
Yeah, can you go back to the ELA?
Yeah.
So the one that is
slow.
What is the historical Black African American, you know, compared to LA Unified Black African American? Because like all the others, you know, I get that LA Unified has a broad range. We're going to be lower than some of the schools that have a lot of stuff. If we're in the same range as economically disadvantaged or, you know, plus or minus, like that's all, you know, it seems fine on every dimension, but the Black and African, and I know that's an area that we've struggled with, but has it always been like this when we compare to how LA Unified?
No. In fact, so you guys have the packet. All of it's there to see, like, look at this slide, math and economically disadvantaged. You can see our variance is gigantic. And we're going to talk about philosophers. And that's why Libby and Aisha are here. But you can even see between the districts, it's all over the place. California's map over there. But let me get to, I did some comparison for our neighborhood schools. So this is ELA for KIPP philosophers. Okay. So this is Markham Middle School is the school that otherwise like students would attend. And this is where you can see like, okay, this is where we are still the better option, even though no one's proud of like 19%, like our kids would achieve great. And, but that looking at this right in Watts, what's the real option? Like it actually looks like this. Now this is not in math. It does not look like this, but you can see that when we compare it to our neighborhood schools directly, that you can see the performance. I think I have Scholar next. So KIPP Scholar, another one of our schools that has a significant proportion of their students identifying as Black or African-American, you can see here too, outperforming Audubon Middle School, which is in the neighborhood. And then you can, you know, look at the data across the board, the performance. So there, it's like, there's the numbers.
You have to really...
You have to drill in, but you know, our performance is low. There are bright spots. There is hope. Our value proposition is still there, right? KIPP is a great place for families. What we offer, our commitment, you know, is so much more than just academics, but academically speaking, when you're like KIPP philosophers in Watts, like that's it's still better. That's where you want to send your child to have, you know, the life that you hope that they would want to have.
Thanks.
So you have this whole packet. I'm not going to go through all of this because I do want to get into, and the comparisons are there. These are the renewal schools. I do want to get to the charter renewals. So we have four schools up for charter renewal. But first, before we go down that path, I have to do a little review and there'll be a quiz at the end. No, just kidding. Around what is happening with AB 1505. And so Curtis is getting here to check, make sure I don't do my fact checking for me, but I'm going to give you the review so that we're all on board because it's going to be an interesting ride with the district around what it's like to renew schools in this AB 1505 world. So the way it was, so for a long time, politics and policy favor charter schools. And so from 2014 to 2019, LUSD made renewal decisions by comparing the academic performance of our schools to nearby schools in the district. So even if our schools weren't at the performance that we know that our children are capable of or we're doing, we were much better than the district. And that gave our schools a huge advantage. Okay, that's the way it was. How it played out. This is KIPP Ignite, for example. We shared this with our school leaders. They were below on the state California dashboard and chronic absentees, all these indicators, blah, blah, blah. Their math performance was above the schools it would have otherwise attended, and their ELA scores were on par. And so with this kind of mixed story of KIPP Ignite, they were renewed for 5 years. And we had to provide some renewal benchmarking, but they were renewed. Right. So this was like a challenging, what we would say, this is a challenge. The data here is not as where we want it to be, but we got the school renewed. But now that changed. So in 2019, dramatic turn against charter schools. AB 1505 was passed and it forced the authorizers to compare charter schools to the state in academic performance. Then the law, you know, limited the authorizer's discretion, and they started labeling schools as high and low, and also made this mid-category. But it really just dictated what charters must do if you have high-performing schools or low-performing schools. And then it made this middle-performing ambiguous, so that the authorizer had discretion around middle-performing, which is when they did the analysis where most charter schools fell into were middle-performing. So this was, I don't care if this is a hit job at the state. So now renewal is determined by three criteria. This is the cover of probably a 1,000-page document that Curtis reads and annotates and gives the summary here.
It's just eight.
Okay, just eight. So the first one is it's basically the actual charter. Do we write a great petition? Do we follow directions? And does past performance in governance, student achievement, organizational management, like show that a school likely to succeed? This is usually a check mark for us. We can do this. Criterion two is the charter school high, middle, or performing, low performing? And did the school students demonstrate 1 year's progress? And the third criteria is, does the school serve all students who wish to attend? Are we fiscally solvent? Do we have any major disruptions? Does the school's governing board avoid conflicts of interest? We usually check the box on this one. But this is the one right here where the law really dictates what the district does and can do. And so the bottom line is that academic performance is the heaviest weighted factor in LUSD's renewal decisions. And so this law has not changed since we went through a pandemic. So 2019 hit, they passed it. A pandemic came, everyone's seeing the results. And there's a little caveat that they gave us, but still the law is pretty direct and clear on what renewal is. So the caveat is that in October, they released this quiet guidance, very quiet, that they're not going to use these labels for low, mid, and high for this next round of renewals. But this, again, gives wide discretion to our local authorizers in determining renewals. And LUSD has not given us yet the guidance on how they're going to renew our school. So we don't know what this now kind of wide discretion is now that they kind of pause this labeling of schools. And I'm going to go to the bottom of this next slide first. So this is important is because the LUSD board composition has changed. And so we have a new board member representing District 2, which has a significant amount of our schools, that's replacing Monica Garcia. And in her campaign, she declined to participate in our candidate forum. There's other things that you can read about her position on charter schools. But we are, you know, the elections, we accept elections around here, everybody. And so, you know, we are working to engage and invite her to our schools that reside in her district so that she can engage with our constituents. But if the pattern ensues, that she will likely be a no vote on many things that come across her way. You know, but who knows? There's always the persuasion tactics that we'll use. So with all of this information, our four schools up for renewal are Scholar, Corazon, Soul, and Philosophers. We will submit these renewals in the summer of 2023. This gives us a runway to appeal to the county if they deny us. We started this process now. Typically, we start in March. We're starting 10 months early to make sure that we're on track. We've created a roadmap for every single school with benchmarks and goals. Their entire school leadership teams have been involved. So Libby's here, but her BOM, her business operations manager, her assistant school leader, were all involved along with all the department leaders to figure out what the plan is. And then additionally, we're engaging with families so that we can make sure we have a advocacy strategy heading into the renewal season. So I'll stop there for questions before we talk about Philosophers specifically.
School board overall now is...
I would say, you know, I can't predict votes, but I can say historically it was a 4-3 in favor of charters with Rocio Rivas winning. Probably we can anticipate a 4-3 anti-charter vibe. But people can change. So it's, yay, lots of, aren't you excited? I'm so glad that we're, okay. So KIPP Philosophers. So in 2020, KIPP Philosophers was identified as low performing school per the California dashboard. And so that's that outline that we talked about. And you all approved an improvement plan before. So this is kind of a review. So in response, we created this improvement plan and we presented to the board for approval in December of 2020. Since then, the school improvement plan has been implemented and updated. And so Libby's here and she's going to talk about what the updates are. And this is important because when it comes to us defending our renewals to the board, the first question the charter school division asks us is like, well, what does your board know? How has your board been involved? And we wanted to be able to say, actually, in December of 2022, we engaged our board with the improvement plan for Philosophers, right? And this is a, you know, we're looking at a 7-month runway and then we'll provide regular updates to everyone, but we want to make sure that they understand that we're keeping our board informed. around these sorts of things. So the three areas are listed here, and I'll go ahead and hand it over to Libby, who's going to just provide an update, and I'll click through for you, Libby.
Good afternoon, everyone. I love being at the tail end of long meetings.
Really, you're welcome.
It energizes me. I can really feel the vibe. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Libby Rundquist. I'm the proud principal of Kit Philosopher's Academy in Watts. That's not South LA, that's in Watts. I have been with Kip SoCal since I was a founding teacher at Kip Soul Academy in 2013. I have worked for Kip Scholar Academy. I've worked for the Lens of Kip Through College team, now Kip Forward. And now I lead Philosophers in Watts. I took over the school during distance learning when I was pregnant with my first child. And so I became a mother and a school leader at the same time. And in the same sort of sphere that happened was when we first put forward this improvement plan, which I'm here to update you on. I also have Aisha Broninger with me, who is, as you heard, our director of schools. She is my direct manager. So she works with me to coach me, and during maternity leave, we'll be taking over pieces of the school management in addition to the team that's on the ground while I am out on leave through April. There were three strategies that were identified in the original improvement plan to help support the school get it back on track. The first was leadership and staff development, and so we've gone through, and although I'm sure you've read very detailed in that 19-page single-space document, I know you've all studied it meticulously, but in case you haven't, these are the four things that we focused on for leadership and staff development. You can see two have been completed in bringing on our school leader in residence, and then a training of our assistant school leader. The other two down here are in progress because, quite frankly, they're going to be in progress for every single school until the end of time. Focusing on teacher and student retention. We've talked about enrollment already with another school. Our school downsized a couple of years ago to fit back onto one campus. And since moving into our permanent facility last year, we've actually been adding grade levels. So we're one of the few schools that is actually adding classrooms and like adding classrooms to grade levels to get back to full enrollment. In terms of teacher retention, the school has, by the numbers, been making improvements, and we intend to see that happen through this year with the understanding of the goal being to put the best people in front of our children. I will not compromise, our team will not compromise on the quality of the educator that is in front of a child. And so making sure that we have the right people in the building to do the important work is always going to be paramount. And that matters a whole lot more than saying retaining for retention's sake purely. The final one that's in progress here is a clear criteria for new instructional and operations leadership. I am, I believe, the sixth school leader to take over the school. It is important that we communicate transparently and clearly how our leaders get into their positions of leadership, what qualifies them to do the job that they do, what support do they get from various different departments, and how are they supported in doing this work long term. It is not easy to lead schools, and we know that there are good people to do it. And so being very clear with our community, with you all, with our students, of what it looks like to actually take on leadership of the school was an important piece of like part one of this improvement plan. So that's leadership and staff development. In terms of curricular implementation and teaching supports, we have completed adopting regionally aligned curriculum. We have reconfigured our special education department. The special education department and brought it back to the school, meaning that I retain, like I coach and manage our entire special education department within the school versus anybody external. It's important that the people who are closest to our children, working with our children, directly manage them. And we've also hired an English language development teacher and implemented an ELD curriculum to work with our ELs. We have had to revise our hiring of a math intervention teacher plan. While we had somebody on staff who covered that math intervention role, they actually ended up leaving the country during the middle of the pandemic because that's what people did during the pandemic if they wanted to. And there was nobody, honestly, who was qualified to fill that position. So we repurposed it into a literacy intervention role. As you heard from SBAC data, like math is something that is we've all struggled with. I think it was because you honestly couldn't like touch the math during like a Zoom. Like you need somebody to literally show you the numbers and show you how to do it. It's very hard to do that on Zoom. Our new assistant principal who onboarded this year
has 20 years of experience in big school improvements, specifically in mathematics, Dr. Dutaba. And so he is now leading our mathematics department and science teachers. And so we're confident that although this did need to be revised, that we found a much more sustainable long-term solution with a lot of leadership experience to help lead the school. And this one in progress here, again, this is going to be in progress for every school, obviously until the end of time, making sure that we are teaching our people in our building how to teach our children in the best way and the most cutting edge. And then our final piece is family and community engagement. These two are still in progress. They would never be marked checked as done if we're doing the work that we say we want to do. Making sure that we have strong community partnerships and that we are supporting our families and attending our events and or really engaging with them in a way that they need to. We have grocery drive-ups. I've literally written a grant to try and get a washer dryer into our building because uniform, like clean uniforms, is a barrier for some of our kids to come to school. Making sure that we have an amazing, and they're called the ACE team, the Advocacy Community Engagement Team. Right. So we have an amazing person who like works directly with us in a couple of other schools. We go to the Freedom Plaza, our cheer team perform at the tree lighting, and so all sorts of events of that nature. We recently opened our building during Thanksgiving to a community partner who needed a space to give out the turkeys that she needed, that she had to like give out. We said, come on through, right? Open our building, come and use our facilities. So this is also in progress and ongoing. Honestly, would never be marked checked as dead. And we think is pivotal, especially as we moved into our new facility, to making sure that we were truly being a community school. So that's where we're at right now. We have a long road ahead of us. We believe we have the team in place to do it. We believe our children deserve the education that we provide to them. We are, in many ways, the best option for them, specifically in Watts. We have multiple generations of families that have come through our school. We have multiple generations of families like within our school currently. It's like, oh, just saying hi to my cousin. Okay, cool. you'd love to see it. And I can take any of your questions if you have them about what we're doing around.
Thank you, Libby, for taking the time to come, and Aisha.
Randy, of course. Just on a couple of the items that mm-hmm. are ongoing, which will always be ongoing, or in progress or whatever, does that hurt us when we present to the district? You know, like, I get where you're coming from, and mm-hmm. I agree with the philosophy, but mm-hmm. it seems like the people on the other side of the table mm-hmm. want to see green check marks on, you know, these action items, not... hey, we're still working on this.
Yeah, when we submit our petition, we'll submit the improvement plan, and like the way that we'll submit it by the end of this year, we'll be able to say like, here's how we completed this, and give all the evidence, like our how we could communicate to the district, right? But we know like at KIPP, like of course, like you don't check a box for supporting attendance, like you always want to support. But for your question, our materials will be very crystal clear on how much progress has been completed and the evidence to back that up.
And part of this is a lot more on the narrative side, which we get to like share with you, and we get to do in pieces when we present the district. And unfortunately, or fortunately, it depends on how you view it. The narrative side is not necessarily always what is like kept in and evaluated.
Yeah.
But
these improvement plans made public. And do other people, can we study others to see if there's parts of the plan that, you know, we could incorporate in ours to make it stronger, or better gaps?
So ours are public because we present them to our board, but there actually is, to our knowledge, no other CMO that is as proactive with building a plan, getting the vote to board on a plan, and actually executing a plan. So we're, as like we say, pioneers in this arena. And the district is always like, this is a great idea. So I don't know if they've shared that with others, but we're the only that we know of that does this sort of kind of intervention or engagement early on.
I mean, from an LAUSD perspective, their school improvement plan is a partnerships program, which is like an entirely separately run program that like goes in and partners with their lowest performing school. I couldn't tell you, I don't have the data to demonstrate which one is more or least effective.
Yeah. And they also don't go through renewal. So it doesn't even matter if they're part of a, if their school is considered low performing, they don't go through a review process. They don't, we know, we ask and we check because we're part of a couple coalitions. And actually, I shared with the other charter leaders in LA our plan. And so I think we have a meeting coming up next week or a couple, where we're actually going through and like sharing our documents because they're like, what are you doing, Kip? And so we'll be sharing our tools, the improvement plans and all the resources with other KIPP, I'm sorry, other charters in LA. Because while we have four, there's 28 that are up for renewal. We have the most charters, but we want everyone to be successful. The fact that we have to go through this process after a pandemic is, I think, immoral or unethical. I don't know, pick your choice of words, but you know, we will still make our best case, best foot forward, because our students deserve our schools.
I think potentially your question is also actually illuminating like what are the best practices and then what are potentially the ones wrong. This on paper seems or appears deceptively simple, and that's actually one of the secrets of the thought, and it's also one of the things that why I say deceptively simple. If you can get quality leadership, like leadership development, if you can make sure that you've got good curricular implementation, great learning, right? And if you've got the engagement of your community right there, everything else is up for you. So again, there's a set of secrets out there, but it's deceptively simple because it's incredibly hard to do with fidelity, with excellence consistently. And it's even harder to do when you're doing so in a turnaround environment. I'll show you the next.
All right. Any other questions or comments? No? Okay, so you have the motion before you, which is a motion to approve the updated KIPP Philosophers Academy School Improvement Plan. We have the first. Heather moves. Do we have a second?
A second.
Carlos, second. Belen?
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes. Thank
you. Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Norma?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Naeem?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
That's everyone.
Motion passes. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Now it's for the really exciting sections of compliance and voting items, followed by finance. All and let's give Libby and Aisha some love.
And let's give Curtis some love for the
All right, Curtis, I got you. Just tell me when to click.
Sure. We're good. Good afternoon, board members. I'm Curtis Watley. I'm the director of policy and authorizer relations. I know we're running a little bit behind, so I'll do my best to make this quick. I'll be presenting two items on the agenda today. The first item is a brief update on the 21-22 oversight reports that we recently received for KIPP Adelante Preparatory Academy and KIPP Bodega Public School. As the board knows, our authorizers conduct annual oversight visits to ensure their schools comply with applicable laws and charter terms. Our authorizers then issue final oversight reports, providing feedback on academic performance, instruction, organizational management, board governance, finances, and just overall compliance. The board will remember that at the last meeting, I provided an overview of the 21-22 oversight reports issued to our LAUSD authorized schools. Since that time, we received KIPP Adelante Preparatory Academy's oversight report from last year from its authorizer, the San Diego Unified School District, and we received KIPP Bodega Public Schools oversight report from its authorizer, the Los Angeles County Office of Education. Both oversight reports were included in your materials packet, and the board probably noticed that unlike the LAUSD oversight reports, San Diego Unified and the Los Angeles County Office of Education provide qualitative oversight reports. They're not neatly summarizing everything in a number by category. So in the slides that follow, I'll provide a high-level overview of schools' oversight reports. So we can go to the next slide. We'll begin with Adelante. SBUC's oversight report takes into account compliance submissions that preceded the oversight visit, as well as the school's enrollment, its staff board performance in typical years, though not this year because of the pandemic, and its financial sustainability. The upshot is that Adelante met nearly all of SDOSD's expectations, and the school remains in good standing. That's not only a good sign for the families and students we serve, it's also a good sign for the school's renewal prospects in 2024. The board will remember that SDOSD issued a corrective action letter to Adelante last year with concerns about the school's financial sustainability. We were pleased to see in the 21-22 oversight report that SDOSD commended TIP SoCal and Adelante for taking positive steps to address those concerns. Next slide. Now we'll turn to the Los Angeles County Office of Education's oversight report for Kip Boder Public School. The board will notice that the Los Angeles County Office of Education divides its oversight report into two sections, one reviewing the school's instructional program and the other reviewing governance, what we're all doing here today. The instructional review covers a broad range of topics and found that FODER is meeting expectations for educational programming, services to special populations, curricular materials, professional development, teacher qualifications, ongoing assessments, facilities, and operations. The governance review covers a similarly broad range of topics, including the governing board's organizational management, its capacity, composition, structure, clarity of roles, and its compliance with the Brown Act. By and large, the governing board met the Los Angeles County Office of Education's expectations for good charter school governance. I would like to draw the board's attention to a few of the office's recommendations for improving governance. These recommendations included one, considering term limits, alternating board terms or officers, which I know happened at the last board meeting, and three, continuing to monitor student enrollment and recruitment. So unless there are any other questions, we can move to item two.
Vote.
When they say encourage, is that like, what is the significance? I mean, the encourage sounds kind of strong.
I think we also clarified with them that that we do have term limits. So I think that was one piece that was unclear within that. So that was part of, I don't know if that's, if we provide a response or not, but I at least clarified that with Ivana, who works on Curtis's team within that. So some of these pieces, like, we actually have done or have in place. That doesn't directly answer what, you know, how heavily, strongly encouraged.
You just explain it to them in a different way, because we do these things. So we just repackage it. All right, that's it. So this is, we have to, so just remember, sometimes, you know, as a public school board, we have to narrate all these things. And so, and it's recorded. So the authorizer who listens to these, they listen and give us feedback. That's how we got some of this feedback. They are going to listen to our audio and they'll hear Curtis's voice and Randy's questions. All right, so this is on something different.
Yeah, this is actually a voting item. So everything I just went through was just an update. We wanted to provide all of you with an update on how we were doing on the client side with Adelante. Now I'd like to discuss the second item I have on the agenda, which is a compliance monitoring review and certification of the board compliance review. The compliance monitoring review asks charter school governing boards to sign off on a checklist of compliance requirements that will be reviewed at LAUSD's oversight visits. This school year, LAUSD's oversight visits will begin in late January. In short, the compliance monitoring review asks the board to certify that each school meets compliance requirements in student and staff safety, teacher credentials, board governance, student enrollment, school climate and discipline, stakeholder engagement, special education, and English learner instruction. The authorized relations team has reached out to the directors of other teams at KIPP SoCal, and we've also made sure that our school, to make sure that our schools are compliant or on track to be compliant in these areas. And we've also reached out to our school leaders to get their review of these items as well, and they have signed off. We are now asking the board to vote in favor of authorizing Board Chair Luis Rodriguez to sign each LAUSD-based school's compliance monitoring review. We will then submit each school's compliance monitoring review to LAUSD, along with today's board agenda, board minutes, and the board agenda approving the minutes at your next meeting.
Okay, exciting. So do we have a motion to authorize Board President Luis Rodriguez to sign the compliance monitoring and certification of board compliance review for the 17 schools listed below? Should we have the first?
So moved.
Mel?
Second.
Norma?
Julie, I think.
Julie.
Sorry, what number? Why is Adelante not listed there?
Adelante is authorized by the San Diego Unified School District.
Oh, it's great. Only for LA.
Only LAUSD.
Sorry. I didn't see.
Yeah. All right.
Ready? Okay. Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Norma?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Naeem?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
That's everyone, Luis.
Okay. Motion passes. Thank you.
Hand it over to Kyle.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, we're going to discuss briefly our financial audit from last year. I'll detail this finding here, but Randy, I don't know if you want to kick us off.
So we had our audit committee meeting Tuesday. And as usual, Kyle and his team did a spectacular job. The auditors were super complimentary. They said in particular this year, there was a lot of just a mess. It was a perfect storm with the old timelines, but, you know, all still COVID stuff and new requirements and everything. And our team handled it really well, with one exception, which Kyle's going to go into. We have a new G&L package, and they're impressed with how it's running and think it's set to scale. And, you know, overall had no real recommendations for things that we should be doing better. So pretty much as clean as we could get with this one exception, which they, but I should add, they said everyone they're auditing has had problems with the same issue.
Yeah, so the financial portion of the audit was clean, as Randy mentioned. We did have one finding tied to the state compliance program, and that's related to the independent study program. So last year, a new state law that authorized special independent study rules or program for just last year tied to COVID. And that essentially made an independent study program accessible to any family who requested it. And so to put that into perspective, last year we had over 200 students participating in independent study. I think prior to that, we probably never had more than 10 in a year, maybe not.
10 total.
Oh, 10 total.
10 total over the course of ever.
And it also, so the scope of it increased significantly. While we were dealing with coming back to school after COVID and all the complexity that entailed, but the state also introduced a whole new slew of requirements in terms of how to run the program. And later on top of that, this is the first year the state required the program to be audited. So through the audit of the, you know, more than 200 students, there were 14 of the written agreements that had to be completed for an independent study program that were out of compliance. A lot of times that might have been missing a signature. In a few cases, we didn't actually have a written agreement on file that we could track down. So things of that nature. We do have to forego the ADA, or essentially the revenue tied that was generated by those students. So in aggregate, it's not a huge impact on us given our scale, but there's the equivalent of 8 ADA. So essentially the revenue equivalent to 8 students will have to give back to the state as part of the penalty, which is roughly $100,000. The biggest impact per school was at Vita, which will have to return $18,000. So the 10 other schools impacted was, you know, less than eight, is around 10,000, 8,000. So not a material impact, but a finding nonetheless that we need to discuss with you. Going forward, in large part, this is going to be mitigated in the future by not continuing with the program to the same extent. So this year, we have roughly 12 students participating in independent study, and they're all really, you know, it's more back to what we were doing before and offering it in extreme cases, usually tied to health circumstances. a big change we've also implemented is that all of the students going through this now come across Cecily's desk and Kavika's desk for approval. And so we've got much more order in terms of ensuring compliance. So I don't think we'll experience the problem to this extent again. And that's it. So we're just looking for a motion to acknowledge receipt and approve all of the financial
audit. Did we get final feedback from Wade? Yeah.
And what was your question?
He was still waiting to get.
I haven't heard.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was the question then? So the audit firm was waiting for a final confirmation from their audit committee, their whatever internal
national office
on one item. They were pretty confident that nothing would change, but it is possible that they may come back and maybe but as long as they don't, or if it's immaterial, then I move to approve and accept the results of the audit.
So, any other questions, Norma?
Yeah, I just have a question for Kyle. What is the criteria for the independent study, and how did the evaluation change, from the past to the new audit? Like, what were the differences?
So, during the pandemic, California enacted a one-year only policy to basically say any family without medical documentation may request independent study due to concerns over COVID, but it was that vague. So our interpretation of it was we will say yes to anyone who asks because they purposely made it very lenient, given the conditions that we were all still with. So I think two board meetings ago, we approved our new independent study policy for this school year, which more or less reverts back to what it used to be pre-pandemic and reserves it for very extreme circumstances that also require documentation. So for example, the majority of the students of those dozen students or so we have an independent study right now are dealing with extreme health concerns. Some of them probably pre-pandemic would have still attended school, but given also their own COVID concerns, the majority of them unfortunately our students who are doing things like going through chemo right now, and it is not, we've all, their doctors agree that it's not safe for them to attend school. So that is, those are the few that we have in study now, whereas last school year, it was any parent who requested it, any reason was approved.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Okay, very none. So the motion before you is to approve and accept the audit of KIPP SoCal's public schools consolidated financial statements for fiscal year 2021-2022. Randy, you made the motion.
Motion.
Is there a second? Norma, second. Belen, please.
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Norma?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Naeem?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
Okay, that's everyone's.
Great. Motion passes. Thank you.
Still Kyle.
Kyle.
All right. So I'm going to briefly provide a highlight of our budget revision that we're asking approval for. So this was discussed with the Finance Committee the week prior to Thanksgiving. And we did not take a vote because we didn't have quorum according to Brown Act requirements, but we did have the majority of the members join us virtually. And there, I don't know if EJ wants to say anything, but there was consensus to support the budget.
Yeah, we had a good discussion and we supported the final team's recommendation for the revised budget.
So I'll just provide a very high level overview. You see that overall, the net income is up slightly from our original budget to the revision. So most of these, I guess, stepping back, the changes that we make to the budget at this point in the year largely are intended to reflect our actual enrollment now that we know how many kids we're serving. The actual state budget that's passed after we make our budget in early June and our more accurate prediction of what our staffing costs are now that we've hired the majority of our teachers for the year. So with that, you'll see a slight decrease in the general purpose revenue. That reflects our enrollment being about 6% less than what we had anticipated. But the per pupil funding rate we're getting from the state is higher, about 3% higher than we expected. So it mitigates the downside there. The decrease in the other state revenue and federal revenue is largely our anticipation of recognizing less of the one-time revenue we're getting from the federal and state government this year. And instead, we're opting to push more of that into future years. So it's not really a negative downside there. It's a recognition that we don't need to recognize as much of it this year as we thought. So it'll provide more cushion for future years. Philanthropy, the big jump there is related to that gift that we received from McKinsey Scott. We're still working to meet the $7 million or so that we had in our budget before we knew we were going to get that gift. And we're layering that on top. So we're not reducing our ambition there at all. And then the biggest thing to note on the expenses, you'll see overall a slight decrease in expenses. The majority of those categories went up because we had a large placeholder in the contingency line in our original budget because of some uncertainty, largely around our extended learning program. And between the original budget and this, we've moved the majority of money out of our contingency budget and have placed that in the, you know, the specific line items above. And so that's the reason you see there. What's remaining in contingency is about $1.5 million for true contingency across schools in the SST. And then there's about a $4 million write-off that's anticipated or that will happen related to that project in Cudahy that we're stopping to pursue. And then just on the balance sheet, the really large increase you see there from what we originally budgeted, both on total assets and total liabilities, is related to what we're projecting now is reflecting the implementation of a new lease accounting standard that we have to use. And so that's the big increase you see there in total long-term assets and total or other long-term liabilities. Our cash position is also much stronger than we anticipated. One, we ended last year's with a higher cash position than we thought. And with the additional infusion of one-time money from the state that we're going to get this year, that a lot will be booked as deferred revenue, that's going to strengthen our cash position this year. And this includes an assumption that we'll put about $30 million into real estate projects this year, which I actually don't think we'll put that much in this year. I think more may go next year, but to be conservative, we're assuming that goes out this year. So that's it at a high level. I'm happy to take any questions.
Comments? No? Okay.
So the, just had a, go ahead, EJ. Just we talked a bit about the McKinsey Scott one-time donation. I know there was an email circulated, but it was interesting to hear kind of the history of it. Oh. If anybody in the rest of the board has questions about it.
Any questions around the surprise? How it went down? Yes, Norma?
Tax implications or any liabilities on our side, you know, just because of the gift itself or...
No. Yeah. I mean, I just want to make sure. Yeah. Yeah. It was,
it's to support our charitable purposes.
Yeah.
So it's in line with.
Yeah, exactly. We have a gift letter and all that.
Like reporting on our side, you know, sort of manage someone internally having all the.
The intention of her gifts are to specifically not put any burden on nonprofit organizations by having to do any sort of extra action. It's a completely here you go, discretionary, and there's no obligation to report anything. Huh?
Go her. Yeah. All right. No further questions, comments? Nope. Okay. So the motion is to approve the revised 2022-23 budget. for SoCal Public Schools. Do we have a first?
Yeah,
I should do it. EJ, first, second?
Second.
This is Heather. Heather, second. Norma? I'm sorry, Bella.
No, it's okay. I was getting everything ready. Yeah. Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Norma?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Naeem?
Yes.
Luis?
Yes.
Okay.
Motion passes. Thank you.
Just real quick, we're going to get through two more voting items. Then we're going to rearrange, and I'm just going to do a quick update on the Giving Tuesday. Then we will hop into this room, standing room only, for a quick update from Cecily in closed session. It should be no more than 45 seconds. And then we will adjourn. And I know Carlos has to leave, and that's okay. We still have quorum to vote. So just wanted to let everyone know we're close to the end. In person, more time. Go ahead.
We should be quick. So we're looking for, this also was discussed with the Finance Committee. And we're looking for a vote to authorize Clear Holdings to amend its line of credit agreement with PNC Bank. So we have a $50 million line of credit with PNC that we use for real estate projects. The impetus for amending it was to extend the maturity. It matures right now, July of 23, which doesn't sync very well with some real estate projects that we hope to start over the next year. So I asked them if we could extend it to July of 26 to give us certainty to use that for coming projects. So that's the key change. In doing, they are going to introduce unutilized fee of 17 basis points, which is pretty common. I was actually surprised that we didn't have to pay that originally. We first negotiated this with BBVA before they were bought by PNC. And then the reference rate for the interest rate has to change from 30-day LIBOR to the one-month SOFR. It won't really, it'll only change our actual interest rate by a few basis points. So that's it. All the other terms stay the same. So it's a very simple amendment.
Okay. Questions, comments?
I actually had
a question. EJ?
Spot, did you guys coordinate on PNC?
We had a discussion.
Yeah, we did. So my relationship was with PNC Legacy and not on the commercial side, which is where we have a legacy BBVA relationship. These were really good terms, you know, risk assessment.
So it wasn't going to move it, but it seemed like it's competitive.
Further comments, questions? No. Okay. The motion is to approve Clear Holdings to negotiate and enter into an amendment of the PNC line of credit. We have a motion.
Motion.
EJ Moose? Second?
Second.
Mel? Second. Belen?
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy?
Yes.
Mel?
Yes.
Phil?
Yes.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Norma?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Naeem? Yes. Luis?
Yes.
Okay.
Great.
Motion. Keep going, Kyle.
All right.
Got it. Passes. Bring us home.
We need the board to acknowledge review and receipt of the first interim reports that we have provided for all of our schools authorized by LA Unified. These were all in your board packet. These are the reports that go to the state. It updates for every school their financial position year to date through September. It also provides a revised year-end forecast and compares that to the budget. So happy to have any discussion if there's any questions. Otherwise, a vote to approve it.
Questions, comments? Nope, no questions or comments. Okay, so the motion is acknowledge the receipt of the fiscal year 2022-23 first interim reports for the above-mentioned schools, as well as the opportunity to discuss the reports and financial results with KIPP SoCal Management. Do we have a first? Randy moves. Second?
A second.
Heather, second. Ella?
Carlos?
Yes.
Randy? Mel?
Phil?
Yeah.
EJ?
Yes.
Julie?
Yes.
Heather?
Yes.
Norma?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Naeem? Yes. Luis?
Yes.
Okay.
Great. So we're going to head into closed session.
Motion passes.
Oh, sorry.
All right.
Real quick, before we do that, 100% board participation in giving to we raised $186,000. Thank you for all of your support and your friends and your family and your neighbors and your, you know, cousins, whatever it took. Thank you so much. Our giant celebration for the demolition of the motel is Monday. If you can make it, it's going to be an amazing celebration. It is a signature for Los Angeles. We have reporters. Howard Bloom is RSVP'd at this point. Huge event. So if you can make it, come on down. I will provide you more information about, we want you to come to our schools more. So we'll give you some more information of when those opportunities come. All right, we're going to head into closed session. We just need to stand in that room and then we'll come out and adjourn.
That's so weird.
Okay, we just came out of closed session. No action was taken. So we are adjourning now. Time is 4:32 p.m. Thank you.